Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Well, kind of. Wendy has the day off. She'll be back soon. Please adjust your chairs. I've asked Dave Ennett to stick around for just a little bit for several reasons. Reason number one, and you mentioned this a little bit, Dave, on Steve Cochran's show earlier. This is a very big anniversary if you're a Chicagoan or a fan of sports. This is the 30th anniversary of the Chicago Bears' Super Bowl win over the New England Patriots, a season that will go down in infamy, a game that will go down in infamy. Hard to imagine that it was 30 years ago.
I can't believe it was 30 years. And it seems like we've celebrated it so many times over the years. The 10th, the 20th, they had a big reunion for the 25th.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. Now the 30th, a lot of the former players who are still around are coming in tonight for a reunion at Soldier Field. But, yeah, I mean, it's 30 years, and it's a date that I think people can just rattle off this date.
Yes.
And the score and where they were and
yeah.
and all of it. And it's just it's hard to believe because I think there are only certain teams in this city, certain events in the city, which really galvanize everybody.
Right.
Which it's something that people cherish fondly. And this is one of them. I mean, this team, the 69 Cubs, you know, the Blackhawks are still in the middle of it.
Yeah,
so I think it's still too soon to kind of figure out how people will look back on this era with the Blackhawks. But that 85 Bears team, it's just amazing to me that no matter what the Bears will do or have done since,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that team is just held in special reverence, and I think they always will be.
This probably isn't even fair to ask you since I'm a Chicagoan and you're a Chicagoan, but if not the best team in the history of the NFL, certainly in the top 3, 4, or 5, wouldn't you say?
I think if you were around that team in 85 and understood it, and I traveled with them that year, and it was like traveling, in my mind, it's how I imagine it would have been traveling with the Beatles.
Yeah.
Because were they the best team? I mean, you can argue that there were some teams that were comparable in NFL history,
and, yeah.
and certainly in this era, I mean, in the television era of the NFL, I can't really look around and say, boy, that team was better.
Right.
There were teams that I think are certainly in the conversation. But I think the fact that they were as dominant as they were, they had so many ways to beat you, and their defense was so dominant
yeah.
and scored.
Yeah, they did.
Scored a lot of points.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, in my mind, stands out. But the overriding thought is they were a team of personalities unlike any that we're ever going to see again. I mean, that in this day and age, in the age of social media, that Bears team I don't think could exist the way they did.
You know, one of the highlights of that, I'll never forget this, is Jim McMahon at that point had this thing going where he would wear a headband, and the NFL, mm-hmm. the people, the powers that be at the NFL, were not too pleased with that because
right.
sometimes he'd write messages on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one of the more popular television shows at the time was Moonlighting, and Bruce Willis in one of the episodes during that had a headband that said something on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, wow, even pop culture is reflecting on what the Bears are doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember seeing Johnny Carson put a headband on. And that's how it was. And that's another thing. The celebrities, the showbiz types, latched onto that team.
Yeah.
I mean, now we kind of take it for granted when Jim Belushi shows up at Wrigley Field or
yeah.
somebody who's from here. But that was Hollywood stars were all over that team hanging out with them. It was cool to hang out with the Bears in 85.
Yeah. Mike Ditka, it's interesting because as good of a football coach as he was, there was a love-hate relationship with some of the players in Mike Ditka. Is that fair to say?
I don't know if there was so much hate. I mean, I think there was maybe at times some antagonism. But
some animosity,
that,
just a little
yeah,
leaking through?
But I think
through.
That there was respect
yeah.
there. I mean, I think that he and McMahon, I mean, it's been said, didn't necessarily agree
That's
on everything.
That's actually one of the guys yeah, that I'd be pointing
but,
at.
But
yeah.
I think that for the most part, and clearly there were differences between Ditka and Buddy Ryan, the
mm-hmm.
defensive coordinator. But the guys who played for Buddy still supported Mike Ditka. I mean,
yeah.
there were guys put Ditka up on their shoulders after the game. Well, you know, well, here's what happened after the game.
5 seconds remaining now. Mike Ditka being hoisted on the shoulders of his team. 13, 10 seconds, 9, 8, 7, 6,
buddy, buddy,
five,
buddy Ryan too,
4, 3, 2, 1. Believe it, the dream is reality. The Chicago Bears are world champions of football.
They How about that?
They put both guys on their shoulders,
which you rarely see.
Field. Well, now it's all
the
about
head coach,
and now it's all about the Gatorade bath anyway.
Yeah. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of times when you get to that Super Bowl game, it's anybody's game. There's a team that's a favorite, and there's a team that's the underdog. Mm-hmm. But in that game, I don't remember anybody picking New England. Everybody was pretty universal saying it's not that the Bears will win; it's by how much. And they just creamed them from the beginning way through.
They did. Well, actually, New England jumped out to a 3-0 lead in that game. And then I believe the Bears scored the next 44 points. New England to get a touchdown in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
But the Bears had a 44-3 lead at the end of three quarters.
We've got people calling in and texting in. If you want to talk about it, it's the Bears' 30th anniversary of their Super Bowl win against the New England Patriots. Seems like it was just yesterday, but it wasn't. It was 30 years ago. You can join us at 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. Dave Ennett sitting in with me, reminding us about how wonderful that that day was. So give us a call or a text, and we'll pick it up in just a little bit. It's WGN. Dave, can you name this tune? This is a tough one.
No, it's catchy, though.
This is very catchy. We're talking about the 30th anniversary of the Chicago Bears win in the Super Bowl. Yeah, 30 years, not making that up. They defeated the New England Patriots to become the world champions, and we're remembering that on this, the 30th anniversary. You have some audio of the beginning of the broadcast from that game
years ago. Here's what, if you were listening to WGN on January 26, 1986, here's what you would have heard.
This afternoon, the Bears face the final hurdle in making a dream become reality. Welcome to the New Orleans Superdome. It's Super Bowl 20, matching the Chicago Bears against the New England Patriots. And a pleasant good afternoon once again, everyone. I'm Wayne Larrabee with Dick Butkus and Jim Hart. It'll be our pleasure to describe the action for you on WGN Radio. The Bears going for their eighth world championship, the last coming in 1963. The New England Patriots playing for their first NFL title, both teams in the Super Bowl itself for the first time.
Now, it ought to be pointed out the Patriots didn't win that day. They have managed to win a Super Bowl or two.
I remember them winning once or twice after that, but luckily not on that day.
Right.
Now, as it was just pointed out, it was their eighth world championship, but they weren't calling them Super Bowls in the early days. They called them the world championship.
This was their first Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And, of course,
they visited one other time against Indianapolis.
They went to Super Bowl 41.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
they've watched a few on TV.
Many way of them.
Too many. Way too many on TV. Yeah. All right. So this is the question that always comes up, and the answer isn't pretty. They looked that year like they had a dynasty coming, like what a team this is. We're going to have this Bears team as a contender for the next several years in the Super Bowl. Didn't play out that way. Why?
Well, I think a couple of things happened. First of all, their defense the following year, Buddy Ryan left. Vince Tobin became the defensive coordinator, and they set an NFL record for scoring defense the following year. They allowed fewer points. But they had injuries at the quarterback position, and they couldn't quite settle on a quarterback. And they had Jim McMahon dealt with injuries. Mike Tomczak came in, played some. Of course, Steve Fuller had played for McMahon in that 85 season. They had the Doug Flutie experiment that did not go well. I think that had a lot to do with it. I really do. Plus, I think it was hard for them to repeat. Although they came back and had a good year, and it wasn't. I think everybody thought they were going to win it again in 86.
Yeah.
They were going to win it again in 87. They got knocked out 2 years in a row by Washington, and both times I think at Soldier Field.
Yeah.
And it was a shock. I mean, it was a major upset when they lost.
A lot's been made of this over the years. I'd love to get your take on it. Walter Payton, who for years was the entire Bears team. There were years where if you were looking at highlight reels of the Bears, all you saw was Walter Payton. In that Super Bowl game, Walter Payton did not score a touchdown, and a lot of people have been critical of that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, and I think that last touchdown the Bears scored was the one William Perry scored.
Yep.
And there were a lot of people who felt, how could you let this guy, who people saw him, even though, I mean, you look, he was a phenomenon.
Yeah.
He was much more than a football player and a first round pick, or as Buddy Ryan called him at one point, a wasted draft pick.
Yeah.
He was a cultural phenomenon.
He was doing McDonald's commercials a couple of months after he got to town.
Yeah.
Open the door, the light goes on. He was doing those commercials.
Best line ever in a commercial, right?
Yep.
But it was, he did commercials for WGN Radio.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
Yeah, he wore number 72. That was no accident,
wow.
By the way.
Wow.
I don't know if that's why Panarin wears 72.
It's convenient.
It is. But it was really remarkable the way, and I think everybody got caught up in that. So I don't know if Mike Ditka got caught up in that whole thing. You know, the first time he put him in the backfield was at San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
where San Francisco, the year before, Bill Walsh had put Guy McIntyre in the backfield. Now, this was a little payback.
Yeah.
In a game the Bears were winning on the way to going 5-0. And I think that at that point, then there was the Monday night game with Green Bay at Soldier Field, where they put Perry in the backfield and handed him the ball.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they threw the pass to him at Green Bay for a touchdown.
Right. And the crowd, if I remember, went so beyond wild. They wanted to see something like that. Yeah. Everybody wanted to see him score
everybody
a touchdown.
Everybody loved the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he had this great, you know, this great gap-tooth grin.
Yep.
And people were just kind of gravitated towards him. And it was just sort of a magical thing. Mike Ditka has said, one of his regrets, and he didn't put it on Perry, but he said one of his regrets is that he didn't make sure that Walter Payton scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl.
That's one of the hard, if there's any hard thing about that game.
Yep.
And actually, Mel wants to talk about that a little bit. Hi, Mel. It's WGN. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know what? Everybody's focused on that. I even heard Jared talking about it this morning. If it wasn't for Walter Payton, they wouldn't have scored 46 points because the defense was so focused on him, it opened everybody else up.
You think so, Dave? Is that something to do with it?
I think that probably had something to do with it. I think that's valid. And I also think he was glad to be on a Super Bowl champion because, as we were talking about earlier when we were talking with Jared, you look at the athletes in this town who never sniffed a championship, let alone win one.
Right.
And he did get the chance to win a Super Bowl, albeit a little later in his career than I think people would have liked. But,
yeah,
I mean, I think it probably hurt. I mean, he sort of hinted at that when he was still around. But I think at some point you look around, and he said he was happy for the guys around him, his teammates, who did get the chance to celebrate a Super Bowl championship.
Mel, thank you. We appreciate the call. Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right. So, again, it's 30 years. Every time I say it, I go, it can't be, but it is.
It's 30 years.
It's 30 years since the Bears squared off against the New England Patriots and took a Super Bowl championship. And what an exciting year it was. What an exciting game it was.
You know, the thing that stands out in my mind, Bill, about that day was walking over. I went with Dick Butkus to Ditka's suite in the hotel to record his pregame show.
Yeah.
And Dick is just relaxed as could be.
Really?
He knew what was going to happen. He is watching the pregame show. He's watching the NBC pregame show in his suite. We go in there and tape the pregame. And then Dick and I walked over a few blocks to the Superdome through some back streets there. And as we're walking by, I mean, Dick, pretty low key, right?
Yeah.
He's not out there wearing his number 51 jersey or anything, but people are recognizing him in their cars.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you hear these horn start honking, and people are stopping. Hey, Butkus, go get him! You know, and it was just one of those cool moments because there was no one who loved that whole year more than Dick Butkus.
Is that right?
I mean, he just was so, it was his first year doing the radio,
yeah.
And here they were marching to the Super Bowl. It was just
beautiful.
A really cool day.
That's great.
Yep.
Thank you for remembering that day. What a magical time it was, Dave Ennett. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then a big show coming your way. It's Bill Left. Wendy Snyder has the day off. It's WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Left. Wendy Snyder has the day off. Kristen McQuarrie is in studio with me of the Chicago Tribune to talk about last night's Democratic town hall. I was just telling you off air, my wife and I watched it, and one of my daughters, Kylie, is 19 years old and watched it start to finish. There's no way in the world when I was 19 I would have sat through 2 hours of that.
Right. I mean, obviously you raised a brilliant child.
Two of them, but they get that from my wife. None of that comes from me.
Yeah.
That's all from my wife's side. The Republicans do not do a version of this, correct?
I don't think so. I don't know that they do this every 4 years where they have the town hall set up and they just have one person interviewing the candidate. But I liked it. It was more intimate. I feel you got to know the candidates a little better. You got them to pin down answers a little more. So I liked it. And they weren't, they weren't on stage at the same time.
Right.
So there wasn't any fighting necessarily, you know, that takes up time between the candidates.
Not only wasn't there any fighting, but they seem incredibly civil toward each other. There was one point where they showed Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders' newest campaign ad, and you have Simon and Garfunkel singing the song America, and they show a very diverse group of people all supporting Bernie Sanders. And then they asked her the question, what'd you think of that? And she said, I thought that was great.
Right.
Would that have played out that way? It had been the other side?
Well, it's interesting because they are in just a tight, the same tightness of a race that Ted Cruz and I'm losing my mind.
Marco Rubio?
That Ted Cruz and Trump in on the Republican side. And they're starting to get nasty. They're starting to get personal. You really haven't seen that. I think the most damning thing, which I don't really think is all that damning, that Bernie Sanders said about Hillary Clinton last night was bringing up her voting for the Iraq War.
Right.
But,
which she admitted was a mistake.
Which she did. But I mean, the country was really behind that vote at the time with the information that we had. So, you know, I don't think he's gone after her as much as he could on the Benghazi, on the emails. I mean, there are rumors. Tom DeLay was out this morning talking about FBI sources saying that she's close to an indictment.
Yeah.
But he's chilled out on that, which I thought was interesting.
There was a moment, and for people who didn't see it, the structure was Chris Cuomo, who was the moderator of the evening, would talk to them a little bit one-on-one, and then he'd open it up to questions for the people who were there in Iowa. One of the questions that went Hillary Clinton's way was from a young guy who said, people tell me that you're dishonest, and then he asked another question that wasn't really that connected to that statement about her being dishonest, and you saw her face kind of grimace for just a second.
Right.
She didn't address that part of it. She didn't address the part where he said that people are telling him she's dishonest. Was that a good move or not a good move to not address that?
You know, I mean, he was referring in large part to Benghazi and the emails, and she really did not address that. What she said was that she's been in public life for so long that, you know, she's been a change maker, and when you are in the public eye for that amount of time, you're going to have some negative publicity. But I didn't think it was a good answer. I don't think a lot of her answers are very good. I don't know. You know, Bernie, to me, is a little crazy, and I do think, you know, the common sense salt of the earth voters of Iowa realize that we can't really have health care for all and free college. We can't expand Social Security. We can't even afford Social Security as it stands now. It's going to go bankrupt in about 15 years.
Yeah.
So I don't think Bernie did as well last night with this core voter. I think Hillary did better.
But isn't there a moment where, no matter who the candidate is, and since you brought up Bernie Sanders, let's go with that, he's explaining how the healthcare system would change. And he said there's going to be a tax increase. I think he said roughly $5,000 per household. Was that about right? So he was explaining the structure of it all. And if you're listening, you're saying to yourself, I guess that could work, but can it work? It can't work.
No. This Medicare for all is pie in the sky. Some numbers. I mean, it would cost $1.38 trillion, and he would pay for it by raising marginal income tax rates. And a lot of people say, great, the wealthy should be paying more. But you know what? The wealthy already are. The tax rate currently, it goes up to 52% of those who make more than $10 million. Now, I know if you're making $10 million, you're doing fine, but they're already giving more than half of their income to the federal government.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's an appetite anymore for big government. And that was a question Bernie got that he kind of stumbled around.
Yeah.
That's what he's running on.
How about, though, when they pull out stats like we're the only major country, and I don't know how you define major countries, but they, for the purpose of argument, that's what they said last night. We're the only major country globally that doesn't have this sort of health care where we don't take care of people. That's disturbing. Why can they do that in other countries? We can't figure it out.
Well, we sort of have with Obamacare, but we also have the best health care in the country. The problem is, even with Obamacare, when the money runs out, like states like Illinois that have enrolled all of these people into Obamacare, I think Illinois has enrolled 1.8 million people.
Yeah.
The federal government is going to stop giving us money to fund that program in 2019.
Which is coming very fast.
And we're broke.
Right.
We're already way, it's basically Medicaid. These people are being enrolled on Medicaid. We're, you know, $2 to $3 billion behind in what we owe hospitals currently for
right.
Medicaid.
How about this? This came up a couple of times last night, and it connects to what we were just talking about. They bring up the fact that pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies are making insane amounts of money off of us. And I've heard candidates in the past talk about that and how that needs to be fixed and reformed. It doesn't seem to get done, does it?
No.
Do they really change it ever?
No. And that is where Bernie is on fire. That's where people really resonate with him when he talks about, you know, the insurance companies, corporations not paying their fair share. There was a pharmaceutical company recently that was charging, I want to say, $500 per tablet
yeah.
for this medication. I don't even remember what it was treating. The owner of that company was indicted
for fraud. Oh, that's Martin's.
Yes.
I can't say his name, but yeah, I know that story, sure.
So the market, in a way, does take care of that when
yeah.
you have more competition. But Bernie Sanders is correct, and he really hits a nerve with the American public when he talks about the pharmaceutical companies, the income gap, income inequality, and that's why he's doing so well.
Kristen McQuarrie is here from the Chicago Tribune. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. That's the call line and the text line. We're talking about the town hall last night from the Democratic side. You had a different stance from Bernie Sanders. He opened. Each of the candidates got roughly 40 minutes to show their points. Bernie Sanders chose to sit. The other two, especially Martin O'Malley, as soon as the questioning started, he stood up very briskly and took his jacket off and dove in. Is that the better play, to be up and active and moving around and physical? Is that the better way to express yourself?
I mean, he's certainly the most polished. And like, I hate to bring this up, but have you ever seen him with his shirt off?
No.
It's
where do you vacation, Kristen? Because I've never seen him with a shirt off.
Okay, it's one of these things that's hit the internet. Just look up, you know, Martin O'Malley shirtless. He works out. He's very physical. So
yeah.
when he gets up.
And Bernie, have you seen Bernie?
You don't want to see that.
No, Bernie actually said last night his wife told him to button up his coat, but he was too fat. So I don't really want to see Bernie with shirtless. But I think with Iowa voters, Martin O'Malley comes off as a little too slick. And, you know, at the end, he was kind of pleading with them, my whole candidacy is in your hands.
Yeah, right.
Do with it what you will.
Right.
And it is. I mean, he's pretty much dead in the water unless he becomes one of these surprise candidates. But I just don't see it. He doesn't strike me as being authentic.
It's so strange because you would think if everything was equal in the world that you'd want a guy that's that slick and that polished because he's going to represent the country. But I keep hearing people say that same thing. He's too slick. He's too polished.
I think Trump has kind of changed the whole game, and people are looking for genuine. And Bernie Sanders is the Trump on the Democrat
side.
He is who he is. He speaks his mind, and he's not so messaged like Hillary is and was last night. You know, you get her to laugh a little bit.
Yeah.
She does have a sense of humor, but most of the time she's just TikToking. I flew here. I did this. You know, it was very heavy on foreign policy last night, which was good. But she's just, to me, you know, she's been in the game too long, and she has no spark.
Yeah. I'm sure you've noticed this. In the early days when Bernie Sanders first became known nationally, every time you saw him, his hair was extremely disheveled and messed up. And now it's not as neat as you've ever seen, but it's a lot neater. Somebody's taking care of him. Somebody found him some Alberto VO5, I think.
Where did you?
I don't know.
You're definitely like a child of the 70s.
Yeah, I am.
To pull that one out.
Yeah.
He's less rumpled, disheveled. His suit is not so crumpled
right.
anymore.
Somebody's pressing him.
But he still has like that static look to his hair
right.
sometimes.
Yeah.
So he hasn't completely lost it. He's 73.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And they mentioned last night that if everything goes according to plan, he would be the oldest sitting president in office, which I know makes some people nervous. Like I said, my daughter was watching with me. She goes, oh, that's too old to be a president.
Right.
I mean, is it? I don't know.
I mean, Trump is 68. You know,
yeah.
He's kind of right behind him. He does come across sometimes. I think the campaign is wearing on him and it's showing. Last night he was really hoarse.
Yeah.
And so he did seem kind of like
that. It's grueling.
It is.
I don't know how it doesn't take stuff out of you. And it gets harder and harder. I mean, when they get to Super Tuesday, those guys really, they have to be dynamos to survive that.
Yeah. They're all usually sick. They need a haircut. They've been sleeping on couches. I listen
it's like watching Survivor.
It is. I mean, it's so hard for us to sit and watch on our couches.
I know.
But somebody was one of the reporters who was pre-gaming the debate talked about how Trump preps. And he sits on his fancy airplane with this desk that has, you know, lined with 14-karat gold. And he gets out a piece of paper and a pen. And he just writes down maybe 5 or 6 words that he wants to touch on when he goes into whatever event he's going into. And that hasn't changed since the beginning of his campaign,
really?
Which I thought was interesting. Now that he's up in the polls, I mean, I think he's going to win Iowa.
Yeah.
I thought maybe the message makers would come in and he would have, you know, people toning him down a little bit.
But no.
Nope. He's
How about
still,
that?
It all comes from him. Not
How about
his
that?
Handlers.
All right. If you have a question or a comment, like I said, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Left. Wendy has a day off. Kristen McQuarrie joining me from the Chicago Tribune talking about last night's town hall. More after this. It's WGN. All right, so last night, the Democratic town hall in Iowa, all three candidates showing what they've got. We've got some phone calls. Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune is here to discuss it with us. Let's start out with you, Sandy. How are you?
Hi, fine. How are you?
Excellent.
Love listening to WGN. 2 points that Kristen made that I'd like to address.
Sure.
Number one, and this has been bothering me since the beginning, whether you're Republican or Democrat, irrelevant. But the fact that she compared Trump to Bernie Sanders, I understand the intention. She meant they are both coming off as genuine and appealing to a certain segment. But Bernie Sanders is a practiced legislator. He knows the facts. Donald Trump is an entertainer. He does not espouse facts. He espouses xenophobia. And the press does not hold him to that standard. So once the press starts, if they ever start holding Donald Trump to the truth, I think it would be a much quicker dissipation. But they don't seem to want to. They want to play for all the entertainment benefit, and it's maddening.
Kristen, hold on for just a second, Sandy. I can't speak for you, certainly, but I think you compared them in the loose cannon category. Is that where the comparison is?
No, I understand where she was coming from because she's talking about them both being genuine, and I get that. But the fact of the matter is, besides their personality, what Bernie Sanders talks about is truth. He has facts at his fingertips. Donald Trump has nothing but a big mouth and an entertainment value, which I get. But the press is not holding him to the truth. And so you have him disseminating lies, distortions, hate, and an icky part of the population is feeding into that.
All right, Sandy, hold on just a second. Kristen, go ahead. Did you want to address that?
No, I agree with you that Bernie Sanders actually is policy-oriented. I mean, he is talking about policy. He has specific numbers for his plans.
Sure.
Donald Trump bloviates. There's no question about that. But the idea that the press has been easy on Donald Trump, I think, is not true at all. You've seen conservative publications in particular who hold a lot of sway over Republican primary voters coming down hard on Donald Trump and calling, you know, pointing out that he's not a true conservative. He's not a small government, traditional conservative candidate, and they are trying to push Ted Cruz as a better alternative.
You know, I understand that, and I saw the front page of the National Review, but the fact is that people, the population at large, they don't read things like that. And I do believe that Donald Trump is and we've all met, he's been around for a long time, so everybody knows his name, is a perfect example of a candidate. It's almost like a TV show. A perfect example of a candidate who is, it's almost like he's trying to be as crazy as possible because he never really wanted to.
Several people have said that, Sandy. Wait.
I do believe, Kristen, I do believe that it is part of the press's fault. I do believe it because from the beginning, they have never, not in a big way, all the appealing to ratings and numbers and entertainment, and this is serious. And this is a blow to democracy, to be perfectly honest.
Is it a blow to democracy?
I don't think so. I mean, I think even if you don't read National Review online, you have had ample opportunity to watch many debates, to read all kinds of coverage. I don't think the mainstream media has been light on Donald Trump. I think they try to fact check him as often as they can. But, you know, then he just his modus operandi is just then to lash out. He's in a fight again with Megyn Kelly
right.
and Fox because they have a debate coming up.
Right.
But, you know, Christian, there's not another candidate I can ever remember where you have media almost rolling their eyes, right? I mean, they're almost like, oh, look at this again.
Right. Yeah, I don't think the media is on board with Trump in any sense of
Kristen, you see the same things that Steve and I see. We pour through stories every morning, things to talk about on the show, and the percentage of them, you know, bashing Trump from every direction for every possible reason, I've never seen anything like it. And yet, even with all that going on, his popularity just continues to rise.
Well, he's also made the mainstream media a target.
You
know, we are part of the establishment, and so the public eats that up. They love it. I mean, when he gets beaten up, he gets more popular. And at this point, you can't discount him anymore. You can't. He is leading everywhere. He's probably going to win Iowa.
Yeah.
He might be the nominee.
Here's a question that nobody seems to ask, and I don't know why. 4 years ago, one of the biggest knocks on Mitt Romney was that he was a rich guy who was out of touch with most of America. How could a guy like that with all that money understand what our problems are? Now you got Donald Trump, a much, much richer guy. You would think that would be the knock on him, but it doesn't seem to be.
No, and I think that is all in personality. You know, people view Donald Trump as more of a self-made billionaire.
Yeah.
Even though his dad did help him out and, you know, he got a start in real estate.
Sure.
But they consider him to be more self-made, and he's bold. I mean, Mitt Romney was like a little kitten every time you tried to, he was the example that Republican voters are tired of. People who are measured, afraid to speak. Every word has been poll tested, and they're tired of that.
Yeah. The big day in Iowa is a week from today. Will there be any surprises?
I don't think so. I think, I just saw a poll that evangelical voters are starting to lean for Trump.
Are they?
And that's really bad news for Ted Cruz. So I think it's going to be Trump and Hillary, and I think we'll know probably by 10 or 11 p.m.
Yeah. Interesting. Thank you. Appreciate you being
here.
It's Kristen McQuarrie from the Tribune Reader. Whenever you can, we'll take a quick break. Then Steve with the news. It's Bill Leff on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff with you on WGN. Wendy Snyder has the day off. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. That'll work on your telephone. That'll work as a text. Bridget Carey joins us right now, CNET's senior editor, host of CNET's Daily Update. Hi, Bridget. How are things? Everything good?
Hey, things are going good. How about you?
Excellent. Thank you. I want to bring you into something. A little while ago, we were talking about last night's Democratic town hall meeting. And Hillary Clinton announced toward the end that she wasn't very tech savvy. That wasn't her strong point. I would think now more than ever, a candidate that understands social media and the tech world would have a leg up on the other candidates. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you saw that even if President Obama, when he was running, wasn't tech savvy, he sure didn't make it known because he probably had a great team with him to help him, you know, get on all the networks to be able to show that he understands it. It doesn't make a lot of sense to even admit that you don't understand things. Of course, with her whole email debacle, like she goes back and forth between like having two phones, but suddenly not understanding it, but suddenly, you know.
Well, now she has to prove to everybody that she really isn't tech savvy. Like last night, she just brought out a toaster and a blender and hit buttons at random just to prove she didn't know what she was doing with them. I thought that was a very brave move. All right, let's talk about Spotify. Spotify is in the tech news. How come?
Okay, well, if you're familiar with Spotify, it's a music streaming app, and now they want to evolve to be a place for video. And I'm not talking about music videos. This is beyond that. This is videos that will compete with YouTube, videos from big outlets like ESPN, Comedy Central, major broadcast networks, and it already started rolling out on the app on Android, and iPhones are going to start to see it next week. This is Spotify's move to say, you know what, you play music in your pocket and you don't look at us, but maybe if you think of us as an entertainment destination, you'll pick up the app more, you'll also listen to podcasts on this, and you'll, guess what, see more advertisements probably because you're spending more time on it and they can make more money.
Bridget, once a player in the marketplace establishes themselves as the place to go for something like YouTube has, what chance does somebody like Spotify have to come in and try to unseat them? Is there any kind of realistic belief they could do that?
Something's happening in the past year where a lot of different apps are saying, hey, come to us for more than just what we originally did, and especially true with video. I don't think anyone's going to unseat YouTube when it comes to videos, because when you think of doing a search for a video you want to see, you just immediately think of going to YouTube.
Sure.
And that's there, right? And I think Spotify and a couple others out there are starting to crop up, you know, just to be, you know, hey, maybe we can make some more money on ads with video ads and be a little entertainment hub, but it gets diluted. You and I are going to go to the same place still, but if you already are hooked on Spotify, well, maybe one or two things might catch your eye and you'll click on those. So I think they're banking on the fact that people are really, you know, really loving their Spotify with their playlists they've already established. It's not a brand new service. So they have a leg up on others who are brand new services trying to compete.
And when does this take place? When does this all start up?
Well, Android apps are already starting to see it, and it's going to be rolling out slowly. And then, like, next week, iPhone apps might see it.
Oh, so very fast. Very, very fast.
Yeah.
All right. What do we need to know about Cortana?
Oh, she's getting a little more nosy.
Oh, good.
Yeah, this is Microsoft's version of a personal assistant, like you have iPhones with Siri. And on Windows 10, she's already been able to do things that you see Google do, where if you link it up with your email, you'll get an alert when there's a package notification or a flight in your email. It'll kind of like automatically put it together and put the flight in your calendar, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the next step now is making sure you keep your promises. So if you're writing an email to someone, a friend, and you say, hey, I'll buy the tickets to that event tonight, well, then later in the day, you're going to get a pop-up from Cortana going, hey, you should buy those tickets.
What? Seriously? Really?
So it's looking for phrases to say, I will do this or I'll get this. And then it goes, hey, you said you were going to get blank. Do you need assistance with that? So you can turn these things on and off. We haven't seen it ourselves yet because they just announced that they're going to do this, but it probably will be rolled out in the next month.
It seems intrusive. I'm sure there's a market for it, but if you started to see these, wouldn't you think I'm being spied on? I don't like this.
I think if you already know that these services are already looking into your email, you start to get a little more desensitized. You already know that if you get a package alert from FedEx or UPS, you're getting an alert on that, or your flight alerts. So you kind of go, I guess it's the same thing. But when it becomes a personal email to someone like your wife or your husband, and then it's like, hey, you promised to, you know, pick the kids up, then it's like, whoa, get out of my family business.
that's a lot. Now, this connects to something I was going to ask you about. We've talked to you in the past about this. Every once in a while, I'll look at something. Say I want to buy a belt or a pair of shoes or a hat or something, and I won't buy it. And I'll visit a website, and it'll show me the other website. There'll be a little box, an ad from that website saying, hey, remember when you were looking at belts or hats? They're still for sale. Well, now I'm getting emails like that saying, you looked at this. We still have them. If you'd like one, it's very easy to order. That just started happening to me in the last month or two. Is that common?
Yep. It's something that has been happening where it follows you around. It can make you kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Wait, at least for the week. Even if you already bought the item, it still follows you around. We're seeing a pushback with a growing number of people who want to use things like ad blocking software because they're sick of it, you know. And Firefox, the browser, just came out with a little extension option that you can turn on and off that will stop tracking of such ads. So if you come across an ad that is going to be hunting you down with cookies, you know, there are options now where it's like you can set a privacy mode, and they do it a little more than the other browsers do when it comes to Firefox.
Yeah.
So it might be worth. And if sometimes, though, the thing you got to think about, if you ever want to block these things, it can break a website in terms of making it look awful or something doesn't load right. So then you have to toggle it off again to sometimes see what you want to see on that website.
All right, good, sometimes good, good.
It's not perfect, yeah.
And then there's a warning you wanted to put out for a website that I'm not familiar with, but maybe more people are. It's called Crash Safari. What's the warning about Crash Safari, and what is that?
Don't go
to CrashSafari.com. How come?
Crash Safari, because it'll crash your Safari browser.
Oh, all right.
A little self-explanatory. People started putting this link up on Twitter, and they would hide it, you know, so it didn't look like CrashSafari.com. They would hide it in a shortener link, and people were going, "What's happening to my phone or my Mac?" And basically, it's overrunning it. It's just having it constantly sync to the point where your phone just can't do anything. So if it happens to you, if you suspect that you've been pranked and someone goes, click on this link, you're going to love it, and your iPhone or your Mac or your Safari browser is just like bugging out, restart, you'll be fine.
All right. But very, very good. Well, Thank you, Bridget. I appreciate that. What's coming up on the daily update on CNET?
Well, today we're talking about a new thing that GoPro, the action cameras, they're able to now stream live to Periscope. So it's not like saving your file and then uploading it later. It's a live stream in real time, and a lot of athletes are going to be doing this week from the X Games in Aspen. So, expect to see a bunch of extreme sports now just live streaming all over your Twitter feed.
Perfect. Thank you, Bridget. Have a great rest of the week. That's Bridget Carey, CNET Senior Editor, host of the CNET Daily Update. We're going to take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill F. on WGN. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder has the day off. Kevin Quick, who's your favorite friend?
Joey?
You don't seem sure of that.
He's a friend, right?
He's one of the friends.
Okay, him then.
Can you name the other five?
Mac.
Dewey.
Stephanie.
Yep.
And
two more. You got two
Rachel,
more.
I think, is
Rachel
one.
Rachel is one.
And then...
So you knew the ones that legitimately are.
Yeah, but I don't watch the show, really.
Now, is that a show? I always wonder, and Kim, you're sitting in on this. Was that a Can't Miss television show for you when Friends was on?
I love Friends, yeah.
Wasn't that fun to watch? Always fun to watch.
Always.
I don't get that show.
Oh, how can you say that? They were friends.
I know.
They loved each other.
That's fine.
That's what friends do, Kev.
Okay.
Come on. I have some sad Friends news that I don't want to have to deliver. I hate to be the bearer of bad Friends news, but this is very sad. One of my favorite friends was Matthew Perry. I thought, no, in the history of television, you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody who played sarcasm better than Matthew Perry did on Friends as Chandler Bing. He was just as sarcastic as you could possibly be. Very enjoyable for people who are fans of the sarcasm. He says that he doesn't remember 3 seasons of the television show.
Isn't that so sad? I saw
it's
that.
It's awful.
Yeah.
It's awful. Because we like to believe, and I know that television is a make-believe fairyland where anything can happen, but we wanted to believe that those guys were having the time of their lives, on camera and off camera. But Matthew Perry, and I'll explain why in a minute, has no recollection of 3 of the seasons of Friends. It says here, things happened to Chandler Bing in seasons 3 through 6 of Friends, like he was reunited with his girlfriend from hell, Janice. That was the girl with the very unpleasant speaking voice. He adopted a baby chick and a duck with roommate Joey, and then he finally slept with the woman who'd be his wife on the show, Monica. But according to Matthew Perry, some of Chandler's biggest life moments barely registered with the actor due to his drug and alcohol addiction. Now, Kim, as a regular viewer to the show, I'm sure you noticed it because I sure noticed it when I was watching. Everything about him fluctuated dramatically. His weight, his look, everything just kept looking different about him.
Well, weren't the reports, you know, when they were doing the show, didn't he go in and out of rehab a little bit?
I think there was one season where he was out for a few episodes.
I think so. I think he did spend some time in rehab.
Yeah, yeah. When Perry was asked about his least favorite Friends episode on a recent appearance of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show, he admitted that there's a big gap in his memory. Oh, my goodness, he said, I think the answer is... I don't remember 3 years of it, so none of those, somewhere between seasons 3 and 6. Now, I could see where you might blank on a week or a couple of weeks, but that's 3 years out of a guy's life. That's a long, long
and
time.
And a significant part of your life and something you'd really want to remember.
Forever.
Being part of history, and, you know, he doesn't even remember it. It's so sad.
It's terrible. Every once in a while, you'll hear a story, mostly from the world of sports, Some guy will tell you that he pitched a no-hitter and he has no recollection of it because maybe he was on some sort of a substance at the time. You hear stories like that and you go, yeah, that's awful that you missed out on it, especially ones that, you know, we were bystanders to this. We were watching on TV, and a lot of I know people who saw an episode 8-9 years ago and they can tell you everything that happened. He was on the show. He doesn't remember 3 years of it. Perry has struggled with addiction to substances, including alcohol and Vicodin. He did several stints in rehab. The most recent one took place in 2001. Since then, though, he has remained sober, opening the Perry House, a sober living facility, to help former addicts transition from rehab to the real world. Take a quick break and tell you this. A couple of years ago, Kerry Wood put together this wiffle ball game, the Kerry Wood Wiffle Ball Classic, and he brought in a bunch of celebrities, and one of them was Matthew Perry. And everybody said to me, because I was doing like field reporting for here, for WGN, and everybody said to me, do you remember that? This was what a day this was.
It was like, really cool.
Oh, it was so much fun. I got to meet several of my idols. Bill Murray was such a nice guy. George Wendt was incredibly nice. And everybody said, hey, there's a couple people here you may want to avoid. And I go, who would that be? And nobody would say the name, but they'd gesture over towards Matthew Perry. They'd go, they likes his privacy. Stay away from Matthew Perry. So I waited and I waited and I waited till the time was right. And I said, I don't want to bother you, but if you have some time, I'd love to talk to you for a little bit. And he looked like, I'm not the kind of guy who usually gives time, but if it won't take long. And then he turned out to be an incredibly nice guy. I didn't go into detail about all my favorite episodes of Friends or anything. He's a big tennis player, so we talked about that and a couple of other things. Turned out to be a really nice guy, you know?
Maybe they were just trying to protect him.
I thought about that. That's very possible, Kim, very possible. Perry candidly discussed his substance abuse with People magazine, describing his Friends experience during the series' 10-year run. I was on Friends from age 24 to 34. I was in the white-hot flame of fame. The six of us were just everywhere all the time. From an outsider's perspective, it would seem like I had it all. It was actually a very lonely time for me because I was suffering from alcoholism. I'll make a strange comparison. For those of you old enough to remember, there was a time where Steve Martin was absolutely the hottest stand-up comic working anywhere. He brought stand-up to like rock star status. He wasn't just doing clubs. He was doing huge, huge venues with 25 or 30,000 people, and they loved him. They'd chant his name. Steve Martin was a legend. I read a book that he wrote called Born Standing Up a couple years ago where he talks about those years, and he says they were the most miserable of his life because of loneliness, because everybody just assumed there's a guy who's at the top of the world, like Matthew Perry, who had television's number one show at the time. How could anything be wrong with this guy? And yet, according to Steve Martin, or in this case, Matthew Perry, just the opposite.
It's just that case that you just never know what goes on behind closed doors.
So true.
You think people have the world by the tail, and yeah, then they really don't.
Terrible, terrible. Although his memory might not be as sharp as Friends fans might expect, Perry maintains that he never used on the set. He was not using drugs or alcohol on the set. I was never high at work, he says. I was painfully hungover. Then eventually things got so bad I couldn't hide it, and everybody knew. I think we knew. The people who watched it, like I said, things fluctuated.
But he could still deliver.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's amazing. He could still deliver.
How is that possible? How does that not affect you? But do you remember how he was like, his weight was like fairly normal for a couple of years, and then he got so painfully thin and then put on a bunch of weight. So you could tell something was going on, but you couldn't quite put your finger on it for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's Matthew Perry saying that from seasons 3 through 6 on Friends, he just doesn't remember it. Hard to believe, but true. We're going to take a quick break. Kim's got the news, and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder has the day off, and it's WGN. Thanks, Kim. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder has the day off. Steve Alexander just announced in the business that the Dow and the NASDAQ are way up. Steve, I'm sure you noticed this. I know I did. On days that Wendy's off, the Dow and the NASDAQ tend to go way up. What's that all about?
Really? Is that true?
Yep.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I've been charting that for the last couple of years. Every day that she misses, we have great days in the stock market. I can't understand the correlation.
Oh, right. I thought Wendy was off because she could have booze delivered from
Well, actually, it's funny you say that. I channeled her as Steve was reporting on that. How does that work now? Explain that to me, that concept.
Yeah, there's a company called Instacart, which is growing in Chicago. Chicago. It's a company that's it's not based here, but it's around the country. But anyway, you can order all sorts of things, food and whatnot, to be delivered to your home. And it generally takes a couple of hours. In this case, Binny's has signed up with Instacart, and you can get booze delivered within a couple of hours for a fee of $5.99.
All right. I know this is a tough question to answer, but is that a good thing for everybody?
I don't know.
I think for some people it's a better idea than for others.
I suppose. And there could be a problem if you don't have enough energy to get out of the house to go buy your booze.
Might cut down on DUIs.
Sure it would. Sure it would. All right. And that's going to be a national thing. That's not just here in Chicago. We've got that all over now?
Yeah, Instacart's operating around the country.
Do you know, I never heard of this before, but about a week ago, I was driving at night with one of my daughters, and we passed by Loyola University in Rogers Park. And there's some cookie company, and again, the name of it escapes me, but my daughter informed me that they have now put this company around college campuses all over the country, because what they do is they'll deliver hot cookies to your room.
Is it Insomnia?
Insomnia cookies.
Is that what it is? Yeah.
That's it exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
And their deal is you call them, you're a college student, because that's where they primarily are located, is by college campuses. You call them at 1:15 or 1:30 and you say, I need 3 chocolate chip cookies. I need them hot and I need them now. And they'll deliver them to you. And think about it. That's as close to a miracle as anything I've ever heard of.
Do they deliver to non-college campuses?
I would have. See, my guess is, and I don't know for sure, but we got to have them on, Kevin, because this would be a good thing to talk about, is that they probably would if you're in the vicinity. I don't know how far their reach goes. But for the rest of us, what night hasn't come up every once in a while where you just go, I know it's late. I don't feel like going to the store, but oh, a hot cookie right now.
Chocolate chip.
That would be nice.
How great would that be?
That would be perfect. And then now you could also get some booze. So hot cookies and booze, just like Grandma used to make.
Well, maybe Instacart will start delivering cookies from Insomnia, too.
There's a chance of that. There is a chance. Kevin, I defer to you on this because I only know this by name. I've never used them, but there's a story today in the paper about Airbnb.
Yeah.
Airbnb, for people who don't know, and I'm kind of one of them, I understand a little bit. I always equate it with it's kind of like the Uber of staying places, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean.
Is that fair?
Yeah. You're renting people's, like, I'm for my bachelor party looking to go to Colorado. And
yeah.
We're looking to rent a house for a bunch of guys and instead of getting a hotel room. So you can get, like, really cool big places or whatever, really. They have anything really listed.
And can they, like, once you put on the application, I need a house for a bunch of guys, and they say to themselves, oh, this isn't a good idea. Can they just turn you down based on that, or what do they need to do to turn you down?
I mean, I guess it's at their discretion, really. It's up to the owner. They can turn you down for whatever they want, really, I would assume.
And the span of places goes from
everywhere.
Really inexpensive to,
oh, yeah.
to a man. You
yeah.
could get a mansion,
and
right?
You can get a mansion. I think you can rent teepees, honestly. Like there's like crazy tree houses listed on there. There's some really cool stuff.
And they're fairly new. How long have they been doing Airbnb? Is it a couple of years?
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
And the best experience you've ever had or the worst, is there one you can talk about on the show or not?
I've not had a bad experience, honestly.
They've all been good.
We've rented down in Key West. We've rented in Galena. We've rented like everywhere. It's been great.
What's the savings as opposed to, I don't know, this is random, but let's say you mentioned Colorado. What would the savings be to you in choosing Airbnb over a hotel or a motel or something?
Well, for like the bachelor party, what are you going to spend in a hotel, like $200 a night or so?
Probably.
I think we could probably find like a mansion to house like 15 guys or so. And the thought there is everybody's in the same roof, so we can all have a fun time
yeah.
and you know, do our festivities there. But
so you recommend this. You say it's a
yeah,
good idea.
I agree. It's great. I love it.
All right. The story I bring up is this. There's a couple of guys in New York, and I don't know. Does this qualify as brilliant or not? They built an igloo. Because of the blizzard, you know, they had blizzard conditions there on the East Coast. So these guys built an igloo, but that's not where it stops. Then they listed it on Airbnb. So you could rent, like you just said, a teepee if you wanted or a treehouse. You can do this. There's no restriction that says you can't just build a wall of snow and sell it on Airbnb.
I think that there needs to be certain amenities, I would assume.
Limited time offer.
Right. Don't have hot cookies delivered. They'll freeze. Patrick Horton, age 28, of Brooklyn, New York, and his roommates, Griff Jones, which was my name when I did adult films, Griff Jones, and Justin Seeley, came up with the chilliest idea to build an igloo just a few months ago. Beers were definitely involved in that idea, Horton told the Huffington Post. But once we had our heads, we knew what we were going to do. We're wondering if there was beer involved. That's what they say over at Huffington Post. During last weekend's winter storm, Jonas, winter storm Jonas, in which 27.9 inches of snow blanketed New York City, the guys got their chance. And on Saturday, during peak snowfall, the roommates spent 3 hours piling snow up into the corner of their yard. On Sunday, one day later, they spent an additional 3 hours hollowing it out and turned it into an igloo. Once the structure was complete, they added creature comforts like blankets, lights, and pillows, all covered in plastic. How do you do that? How do you do lights in an igloo? You got to run a long extension cord, right? That's the only way to make that happen. They also added a potted plant to the front entrance for a warm and welcoming touch. That's the problem with so many igloos. When you see them, you say to yourself, I'd like to stay there, but it just doesn't have a warm, welcoming touch. Would a plant kill you? A little before 4 p.m. on Sunday, Horton decided to list the igloo on Airbnb as a hoax, using the description of the igloo in the listing to poke fun at Brooklyn and their hipster stereotypes. Dripping with ingenuity and the alt lifestyle aura lies this snowpocalypse's most desirable getaway, the Post read. Built completely by hand and all natural, come experience this chic dome-style bungalow with bae, B-A-E. Is that a word I should be aware of? What is that?
Before anyone else.
Is that what that means?
Yeah.
I didn't know
They're
that.
They're hitting all the buzzwords right now. Great ad.
The guys listed the igloo at $200, thinking they might possibly get some bites. We thought maybe somebody would want to rent it for a really original Tinder date, Horton said. How many girls can say that they've taken a date to an urban igloo? Soon after it was posted, the listing went viral, spreading across Facebook and Reddit. And then, according to Horton, five people inquired about the igloo before Airbnb deleted the listing around 7 p.m. on Sunday. Now, so there must be some standard, Kevin, where they say it has to have slightly more amenities than just snow and a plant, right? I don't know what the ruling is.
You know, I just think that's just unfair of them.
It is. We are happy to see that you guys are staying busy and having fun during Blizzpocalypse. Blizzpocalypse. This according to Airbnb rep. Unfortunately, your igloo, while very well constructed, has failed to meet our occupancy standards and has been removed from search results. Be sure to pick a place with running water, electricity, and a roof that doesn't melt, they told him. Though the igloo is no longer available as a Tinder date, Horton claims that his frozen abode won't melt in vain. We definitely plan to get some use out of it and enjoy it before the weather warms up. We learned this weekend that people love igloos. Well, we all know that people love igloos, but it'd be hard to go to New York and stay in one for $200 a night.
Is that what they were charging?
$200 a night.
Man, but they're hitting all their apps, though. You got your Tinder, you got your Airbnb, you get the cookies.
I wonder if this, does this change anything about the hotel industry? Are hotels nervous about this at all? Because it's an alternative to them.
They're upset about it because the Airbnb in many cases, doesn't have to pay. They don't have to pay the same taxes, the lodging taxes that the city requires of legitimate hotels. That's one issue.
Steve, what about, you know how on if you go through Uber, they have what they call, is it called peak hours, where they can double the price?
Surging.
I'm sure there's certain weekends that are going to be higher. But like, you know, if we were to do an Airbnb around Lollapalooza time, I'm sure they can set their price higher for that.
Right. So I could list, if I wanted to, I could list this studio on Airbnb. I could say, come on in.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
I know that other shows certainly go on here at night. Patty's got the show and Nick's got the show. Justin's got a show. But that would be kind of a cool experience to just list the studio as an Airbnb.
And I think I'm fairly certain you could rent like individual rooms. So if you wanted to like give up an extra bedroom at your house.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, they talked. Remember like when there was a chance that Chicago might get the Olympics, there was a lot of discussion about how much money could be made off of selling your rooms to, you know, potential visitors from around the globe. But doesn't that make anybody a little nervous having people from anywhere just stay in their house? I don't like having people I know stay at my house. If people from you pick the country are in here just living in my, that'd be awkward for everybody, I would think. Plus, Steve, I'd have to learn their native dances to make them feel welcome.
Sure.
I don't know any Czechoslovakian dances yet.
You'd have to cook their native dishes.
I would have to. That's a lot to ask. I don't know if I'm prepared for that.
Just for fun, I'm looking at the Airbnb picks right now.
Yeah.
So they have categories such as it yurts so good.
Wait, else? What does that mean? What is that?
Living in a yurt. It's like a hut, sort of. Or let's see what else.
It only yurts when I laugh.
Windmills, castles, sleeping in a bus, back to school, horse ranches, best of Bali, retro trailers.
But you can sleep in a bus anytime you're on a bus. You have the option to sleep in a
well,
bus.
Well, I think these are like houses or buses that have been turned into housing.
Oh, that sounds romantic.
Bring your own sleeping bag.
Trees and Z's. That's
Trees and Z's, I like the name.
Homes of famous authors.
Oh, that would be cool. To stay at John Steinbeck's tree fort. That would be fun. All right, we will take a quick break. Have you had any experiences like this? Did you stay in any place strange in an Airbnb? This is all very new to me. I don't know that I could do it. I like the hotel feel. I really do. 312-981-7200 is our phone number and our text line. It's Bill Left. Wendy Snyder has the day off. More show coming your way next. It's WGN. We're talking, we're all talking about these guys who decided to take advantage of the torrential snowstorm on the East Coast. Three guys, Patrick Horton, Griff Jones, and Justin Seeley, decided they were going to build an igloo, and they did, and then list it on Airbnb. It didn't last long. The Airbnb people have some sort of standards, evidently, and they said you got to have a little bit more amenity-wise than just a block of snow and a plant. Very harsh. Very, very harsh. What are your experiences? Have you ever been to one of these Airbnbs? Let's start out with Diane. Diane, hi. How are you?
Fine. First of all, I got to say you make my day.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you.
Yeah, I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
My husband and I have been staying at Airbnbs, and we stayed at everyone we've had a great experience with, but one of the best was for $150 a night. In Hollywood, in season, in the hills, we stayed at the most beautiful place. It was like a two flat.
Yeah.
The couple lived above. We had the total run of the downstairs, plus a beautiful patio and a fire pit. And not only was it wonderful and beautifully appointed, I happened to be sick at the time.
Yeah.
And I needed one extra day. And I said, oh, I'm going to move in with friends. They gave me the place for another night.
Wow. How about
I know
that?
It was like... unbelievable. But we've stayed at them in San Diego. We've stayed at them in Scottsdale for a wedding.
And never an unpleasant incident. It always goes off according to plan.
Everything. You know, I think most of these people set it up as an Airbnb, like the condo in Scottsdale.
Yeah.
Was really well appointed. And, you know, we're older, so we like nice things.
Well, I don't blame you. But to stay at the place you said in Beverly Hills, you said $150 a night. That you could get a room for $350, $450. So you saved quite a bit of money.
Oh, yeah. And believe me, I've stayed in those hotels for $350, $400 a night. And not near as nice. Plus, I'm walking through the Hollywood Hills.
Yep.
I'm in a much better part than an airport thing. So
yeah.
We've had great experiences. And the good part about Airbnb, I've never tried VBRO. But Airbnb
is that a competing? That's a competing company,
yeah.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, and they've been around for quite a while. But Airbnb rates you, and you rate them.
Mm-hmm.
So they really check you out before you stay there. And if you aren't, you know, if you're going to throw a wild party or be destructive at all, you will never rent from them again.
Good. I like the standards. That's perfect.
Well, yeah, but you can pick it. I mean, London, they have places that you cannot believe. They might be $400 a night, but you're staying in a place that would be $1,000 a night.
Really? Wow. Well, so, okay, good. I like hearing it. It's so weird because it's not really in my makeup to do something like that. I'm much more of a hotel guy, but you make a good argument for it. You really do.
Yeah, it costs, you know what happens? You get older and the money gets less.
Yeah.
you cut back, but oh my God, we have very good friends who are musicians who are, you know, Chick Corea's group.
Wow.
I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But they stay in, they talk to us about it because they do it mainly in Europe, and they stay in Airbnbs. And
it works for them.
It works well.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well, Diane, thank you. I appreciate it. Have a great rest of the week.
And thanks for being so entertaining.
I appreciate
it. You guys make me laugh all day.
Oh, good. That's our goal. Right. Thanks, Diane. Take
Alrighty.
Care. Bye.
Take care.
Kevin, when you stay in these, is there a list anywhere? Like, I remember, like my when my parents would travel, there'd be a list of things that were allowed and not allowed in the house when they were gone. Is there a version of that when you're staying in one of these?
Yeah. I mean, as far as like smoking and things like that.
Yeah. What do they tell you you're allowed to do or not, or does that vary?
I think it varies per property, and there is like a cleaning fee involved. So every time you come in, it's sparklingly clean, and there's a fresh set of towels and everything you need, and
yeah,
it's really great, truly.
And they provide on the website. My guess is they provide you with the exact picture of the room you'll get. There's no surprises, right?
Yeah, I mean they'll give you a complete rundown of the property. And a lot of times, another nice feature is if say we're going to Galena or whatever, they have a full kitchen, not necessarily stocked always, but they'll have like all the cookware you need and things like that. So you're not having to haul that out there with you. And
all right, that's one of the questions is if you're staying in a hotel, a lot of times they'll have what they call an honor bar, which means you open it up, you take something out, and it's a $12.50 charge. How do they do that with their own refrigerator in an Airbnb?
Usually it's empty.
It is empty.
Usually it's empty, but unless they specify otherwise.
Yeah.
They're accommodating.
Are you allowed to redecorate? Like if you go there and you say, I like this room, but I think it needs to be brightened up a little bit, maybe I'll put in some French doors. Are you allowed to do that?
I think so. You might have to run that by them beforehand.
It's worth checking this stuff out, though, because there have been cases of Airbnb hosts installing hidden cameras to spy on guests. And there have been some
lawsuits. That's just a bonus.
Thing.
It's like you're on TV.
Right. I could use it. I'm in Screen Actors Guild, Steve. I could use it as a credit. Okay. I could put that on my resume.
Well, whatever works for you.
I did a shower film in Phoenix, Arizona. You can see it online. Wow. Oh, well, that would be a definite downside, I would think, to the Airbnb. I don't know. So maybe some people like that, but to me, that's more of a negative. I don't know. All right. So sadly, again, if you're looking for an igloo, a place to stay on Airbnb in New York anytime this week, you're out of luck. The last igloo is gone. But who knows? We may get more snow this season. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. That's in a minute. Stick around. It's Bill F. Wendy Snyder has the day off, and it's WGN. Thank you, Kim. It's Bill F. Wendy Snyder has the day off. She's scheduled to return tomorrow. Kim, a couple of things. Number one, in the news, you mentioned that Aladdin is coming to Chicago, which is very exciting.
Yes, isn't that exciting?
It's very exciting. You know who's up for the role of Jasmine? This is even more exciting. Our own Judy Pilak is up for that role.
She wears those billowy pants, and they look really good on her.
Right. It's finally paying off. So, boy, I hope she gets it. She's tried so hard to get into a Broadway musical. This could be her big break. The other thing
I would have pegged her more for Jafar.
Oh, she could be a great Jafar. She would be wonderful as Jafar. The other thing is there's a story that you and everybody in the news everywhere in the country has been following today, and it looks right now like it's a non-story, and that's the San Diego shooting that is not a shooting.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
Well, it looks like there was one person in the basement who reported hearing three gunshots. SWAT team came in, the U.S. Marshals, they thoroughly searched the building, and so far nothing has turned up. So hopefully, it's just a false alarm.
Remind
me. That's what it appears to be.
It looks right now. Now, we were just watching CNN during the break a little bit, and they said that they're still combing the building and making sure that everything is the way it's supposed to be. But as of now, it looks like it's a non-shooting, which is good. That's the last thing we want is a shooting. You remind me, because I'm not sure. Was this the same hospital that had an incident not that long ago? This is the second incident. I mean, the last one was a real one, if I'm right.
I'm actually not sure about that.
All right.
I don't want to speak out of turn, so I'm not sure about that. But I do know that this is a very large complex, so they are searching the whole complex very thoroughly. Schools were on lockdown in the area earlier. That has now been lifted. Kids at a daycare on the campus are secure and safe.
Good.
So they're just double checking all of the buildings because it appears to be a very large area that they're just making sure nothing's going on.
All right. Walk me through this a little bit. Because the world is the way it is, we almost have to jump to conclusions sometimes. I hate to say it, and I'm thrilled that nothing bad has happened there in San Diego. But because everybody is so news conscious and there's such a competition to get to stories, even though this was a false alarm or seems to be right now a false alarm, it was reported almost immediately. And there were news crews, news teams there on the site within seconds, within minutes, realistically. But that almost is the way that things are going to be now, isn't it?
Well, that is the way of the world. And even the Naval Medical Center put up on their Facebook page, told everyone in the area to run, hide, or fight.
Wow.
I mean, I guess that's what you might tell Marines. But yeah. If I were in that medical center, I'd be a little nervous about that.
Yeah. Although those are, I think, your only options in a situation.
Absolutely. What can you do?
Run, hide, or fight, or a combination of the three. So we're happy to report that as of right now, the story at the medical center in San Diego, the military medical center, appears to not be a shooting, but I'm sure that there's still people covering it, and we'll get more details as the day goes on.
But just as a precaution, the base at that area, the medical center, is still on lockdown. They're still checking it out, yes.
All right, safety precaution there. All right, several things coming up in the next couple of hours. As I mentioned, Wendy's off today. She is scheduled to be back tomorrow. So don't panic. She's still with the program. She's just got a day off. We're going to talk a little bit about a horrible, horrible epidemic. It's something that's been developing not just in our country, but now worldwide, and that's child obesity. We'll talk to somebody from the WHO Commission. Their latest report is frightening about the number of incidents, again, not just in our country, but around the globe, of child obesity and what we could possibly do to stop it. The numbers just keep rising and rising. It's miserable. Ryan Burrow will check in with us at 2:05. I mentioned this with Steve a little bit during the crosstalk. There's been a horrible situation in Flint, Michigan with tainted water. And by the way, a quick side note, several organizations in and around the Chicagoland area are doing their best to help and donating water. And if you're one of those people, thank you. And if you haven't done it yet, there's all kinds of opportunities to do that, to give clean water to the people of Flint who need it desperately for every reason you would need water. I said the other day when we were talking about it that if I was in their situation, because they're still being charged for this awful tainted water, I said at some point I would just say to them, I'm not going to keep paying for this. What am I paying for? And we went through a litany of reasons why that shouldn't be the way it is. You need water for everything. Well, now people are doing that. They've stopped paying their water bills. That's creating a little bit of a stir in Flint. So we'll get the latest from Ryan Burrow. And that's what's coming up in for the rest of the show. I also wanted to talk about this briefly. We don't have a whole lot of time, but I'll bring this up here. I'm sure everyone is aware at this point of the Oscar controversy. We've talked about it here on the show. It's getting a lot of airplay everywhere. The fact that for the second year in a row, no African-American actors, no black actors have been nominated for any of the major categories. That includes acting, supporting acting, actress, supporting actress, director, best film. More and more Hollywood types are coming out against this. I know Matt Damon made a statement, an interesting statement yesterday. Now Danny DeVito has chimed in. It says here, this is on Yahoo, Danny DeVito is the latest actor to chime in on the controversy surrounding the 2016 Oscars after the acting categories featured all white nominees for the second year in a row. Here's what he says. This is Danny DeVito. It's unfortunate that the entire country is a racist country. The 71-year-old star told the Associated Press at the Sundance Film Festival that happened on Saturday. This is one example of the fact that even though some people have been given great performances in movies, they weren't enough. DeVito's comments came on the heels of the Academy announcing that they are institutionalizing new guidelines for some A-list actors. You already know that. That's been discussed kind of at great lengths over the last couple of days. The question I'm asking is this. I like Danny DeVito a lot. I think he's a great actor and a pretty good director too. Is what he said true? Do you find that to be true? I'll read you those words again because they're very disturbing. Danny DeVito said, "It's unfortunate that the entire country is a racist country." I know there's plenty of incidents where that's true, but on the whole, is that true? Do you look at this country? Do you look at America as being a racist country? Like I said, we're not flawless by far. But is America a racist country? Do you see that to be true? Is that what we're living in right now? We're at 312-981-7200. We'll examine that a little bit. Love to hear your thoughts on it. You can call in or text in again, 312-981-7200. We'll pick that up in just a little bit. It's Bill F. on WGN. All right. First, let me catch you up. It's me, Bill. Wendy is off today. She'll be back tomorrow. We're talking about another chapter in the Oscar controversy, Danny DeVito weighing in. You all know him as Louis De Palma on Taxi, and he's been in some good movies. He's directed some good things. He says, he's chiming in on the Oscar controversy. He says, it's unfortunate that the entire country is a racist country. This is how he's explaining things away. I like to think that's not true. I like to think even though we have incidents of racism on a daily basis, that overall this is not a racist country. His words, it's unfortunate that the entire country is racist. Please tell me that's not true. We'll go to your calls. We'll go to your texts. But Steve in the newsroom has some news for us. What's going on, Steve?
Yeah, we're getting word now that Abe Vigoda has died. First seen in film in The Godfather.
Tessio in The Godfather.
Tell Mike it was only business. Oh. And then on Barney Miller for 7 years or so.
Phil
and then
Fish.
On Fish.
Yep.
With Bernice. Bernice and Fish went on to their own show and ran a foster home. Remember that?
Yes, they did.
You know, and well, let's just state the obvious, right? There have been a lot of reports of Abe Vigoda dying through the years.
People have thought forever that Abe Vigoda had died, when in reality, until today, that had not been the case.
Word comes from his daughter. Abe Vigoda was 94 years old.
Now, a couple of times on the show, Steve, I've been blamed when a celebrity passes away.
Yeah, well, it happened again, didn't it, here?
The other day, we were talking about businesses in and around the city that had interesting names, and I mentioned a Chinese food place that's no longer around called Abe's Pagoda.
Mm-hmm.
It's been gone for years,
mm-hmm.
like people thought Abe was, and he wasn't until today. I hope you don't blame me for this, because I had nothing to do with this.
It's really not for me to blame. I just present the facts.
Oh, man.
Once again, there seems to be a tie here.
I like Abe Vigoda.
Yeah.
That was sad news.
Good long life.
All right. Let's go to your calls and your texts. We're talking about Danny DeVito's statement. It was actually, it's being reported yesterday and today, but it happened on Saturday as they asked him to chime in on what his thoughts are about the Oscar controversy, that all the categories are so lily white. And again, his words, it's unfortunate that the entire country is a racist country. I don't like to believe that. Matt, is that true? Is that accurate?
Hello?
Hey, Matt, go ahead. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think Danny DeVito opened his mouth without thinking before speaking, because that would put him in the same category as being racist. Like you said, there are incidents of racism in this country, but I would really like to think that most people are not. You know, the film industry themselves have said they need to make some changes.
Yeah.
But for Danny DeVito to say that everybody in the country is racist, that would make him one as well, and I don't think he wants to have that label.
I can't imagine that he would. Well, thank you, Matt. I appreciate it. Thank you. He says, Danny DeVito goes on to say, we are living in a country that discriminates and has certain racist tendencies. So sometimes it's manifested in things like this and it's illuminated. But just generally speaking, we're racists. We are a bunch of racists. Now, I know that we're told from science that most of us are afraid of anything that's different than us. So I guess you could say, if you're trying to correlate this, that just by the mere fact that races are different, no matter who you are, that there's going to be something going on there. But I don't like to think that the entire country, I don't like to think that we're racist. I kept thinking, I hate to use this as an analogy, but I have to. When Barack Obama was elected president, I said to myself, this isn't going to end racism, but this is going to make the hugest stride of ever. The president of the United States is a black man. I didn't think I'd see it in my lifetime. But there's enough support. There's enough people willing to get past the racist past that our country has had. But then so many things happen. And I don't even know if I put the Oscar controversy in that same category, because this is, the Oscars are a popularity contest, and five people win in every category. And as unfortunate as it is that none of those actors are black or actresses are black this year, I don't think anybody realistically was looking at a ballot at any point going, well, I don't want her to be in there. She's black. I can't imagine that we live in a time where that's a reality. Let me read you some texts. I think racism is being confused with diversity. Possibly. I guess maybe possibly. I think he was high, says 309. Do you think that there are black and white races? Yes, there are. Isn't that what defines a race, is the color? Yeah. I think, this is from 630, I think if we were a country that had a civil war partly because of slavery and civil rights just granted to everybody half a century ago, and we didn't, where did it go? I'm sorry. they're coming in fast. And we didn't have racism rampant in our country, then I would think that that was quite odd and strange. 269, not everyone in the country is racist, but unfortunately ours is a racist country. So I guess what that infers is, I'm just imagining it, that they're saying that the majority of us are racist. Is that even true? I hope that part's not true. Let me see. There was a good one in here. Half the country, where is it? Half the country is a racist country, ? It depends on your experiences in the country, doesn't it? Minorities, especially the Latino and black minorities, may believe that. Here, you know, the problem with it is this, and we talked about this the other day when they announced that there'd be some changes to the Academy voting. The problem is this. It goes beyond the Academy itself in voting for the actors and actresses and directors. The problem is that enough good movies aren't made that feature black actors in prominent roles. I mean, if you look at any year, not just this year, but almost any year, there's always just a very, very small handful of black actors or actresses that are even considered for this award. And there's dozens of actors and actresses and directors and films that are considered for the white prizes. It's awful, but it's true. I mean, on any given year, this year, the argument was always, how come Idris Elba wasn't nominated and how come Will Smith wasn't nominated? So that's two. But go much deeper than that. You can't. It's impossible. There's only the lead roles, the number one and number two roles in any film for a lead actor or actress or supporting actor or actress are almost entirely white. And that's where the problem is. It's not in the voting. They're just not given enough choices, I don't think. Let's go to Jennifer and get her thoughts. Jennifer, you heard what Danny DeVito said. We live in a country of racists. It's a racist country. Is that true?
Yes, it is true, I believe. I don't think that most people realize that they're racist. I think it's inbred in our society.
What do we do about it? Is there something we can, there should be something we can do to fix it?
Well, when people want to speak honestly about what's going on, so often, especially since Obama has won as the president, if you look at some of the comments that people make, every time something's about a black person, you get all these negative racist comments that are unnecessary, and that just proves what a racist society we are because of the things people just put out on the internet. Jennifer, why write things that way in the internet? If you have something to say, just say it.
I'm with you on that.
We can debate the issue.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen things, you know, there'll be something going on nationwide, and then when Barack Obama does anything about it, he's often attacked, and I think to myself, the way he's being attacked, I'm not sure that would happen if he was a white man.
And people forget that he is part white.
I know. How about that?
Look at the real world. So I think that people, you know, as a whole, I think our society is racist, but I don't think most people think they are, because I think it's just inbred in our society.
Can I ask you, this is connected, but it's disconnected at the same time, Jennifer. Are you a fan of movies? Do you go to see movies? Do you watch the Academy Awards?
I like old movies.
Yeah.
So I guess most of the movies that I see, I usually see them after the fact.
All right.
And something that's won, I'll say, my God, that won? Or something that wasn't nominated, I said, that wasn't nominated?
All right. So that's just like all of us.
Yeah. I think the people at the Academy actually go by things that they prefer.
Oh, without a doubt.
I think that's a lot of it, too. It's like, well, I prefer this type of movie. I prefer that type of acting. And it's also a popularity contest.
Oh, it's the ultimate popularity contest. There's no doubt. But do you think, be honest with me, do you think that any actor or actress or anybody who is nominated, nominating the awards, took a look at the list of actors or directors or actresses and said to themselves, I would prefer that guy over that guy just by mere fact that that's a white actor as opposed to a black actor? You don't see that, do you?
I don't think they did that. I think they just might not have liked the movie or the person or that type of movie.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody's different. If they happen to be white, they might like certain types of movies that are white and not black type of movies.
Yep.
I like old movies. So I'm an old movie buff. I compare everything to old movies.
Jennifer, ironically, those movies were in black and white. Can't we learn from our past?
Yes. Let's make them in black and white again.
That's the way they should be. Jennifer, I appreciate the call. Have a great week.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. Thank you so much. We have to take a break. Steve has the news, and then we have a lot more show ahead. It's Bill Left. Wendy Snyder has the day off, and it's WGN. Steve. Thanks so much. It's Bill Leff on WGN. Joining me now is Dr. Timothy Armstrong. Dr. Armstrong is a program manager for the WHO's Commission on Ending Childhood Obesity. That's the World Health Organization, with some startling finds. Thank you very much for being here, Dr. Armstrong. Everything good with you?
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much. Happy to be able to speak to you.
Good, thanks. I'm reading over these statistics, and I'm reading over the report, and it's as ugly can be. It says here, childhood obesity has reached alarming rates globally and is becoming, and I quote here, an exploding nightmare in the developing world. Why is this happening?
Well, thanks. That's a very interesting question, and I guess the simplistic answer is the same as obesity anywhere in the world, in developed or developing countries, is that children in particular are eating more food and than they're expending in being physical activity or exercise. The issue we're seeing in particularly developing countries is that the rate of increase in obesity is quite alarming and much greater than what we've seen in countries like the US or Australia, who we know have already quite alarming rates of childhood obesity. What we're seeing in developing countries is an even a more rapid increase, primarily due to some biological factors, that some populations are actually biologically predisposed to increasing obesity or increasing fat, but largely also that many developing countries don't yet have the public health policies in place to regulate markets, to ensure that food provisions at school are appropriate foods, that advertising of foods that we would, you know, some people would call junk foods are quite rampant, and these foods are being exposed to young children, and a sort of a desire to, as many of these populations in the developing world, many people get more income spending on these sorts of high energy products that are being heavily advertised, that of course are not particularly good for us.
So is it better or worse? Is it the high income sector or the low income sector that seems to be affected more by this?
What we see in developed countries or high-income countries is that it's primarily now a problem that's most seen in people of low socioeconomic backgrounds. So folks that are not necessarily have had access to good education, good nutrition and exercise literacy, often spend their hard-earned money on products that may satisfy, able to feed the family, may satisfy the family or the children in a way that satisfies them mentally, if you like, because they're being fed something that's sweet, it tastes good, it's being advertised, it's got a feel-good factor. So that's the sort of what we're seeing in the developed world. In the developing world, it's those populations that are getting more well off, those people who are being in middle or upper incomes, that actually have the income to be able to purchase and buy those products, and are moving away from the more traditional lifestyle. So it's different in different countries depending on the geography and the economic climate.
It's strange, Dr. Armstrong, because I've always heard my whole life that America was the country where the poor people are overweight and the rich people are skinny, as opposed to the rest of the world where it's the opposite. But now somehow it's all balancing out. It's a problem everywhere.
Yeah, if balancing out is a good thing, I'm not sure, but that's right. It certainly is a global problem. Frankly, it is only in the poorest of poor countries, and primarily in sub-Saharan Africa, and some of the poorer countries in Asia that don't yet have this issue. But what for WHO is increasingly of concern is even in some what we would consider to be poor countries in Africa, in the urban settings, in the urban population at least, we're seeing rapid increases in obesity and amongst kids, again because of the rapid change in lifestyle as increasing development in those countries takes place. So, you know, economic development is a good thing on the one hand, but often it can bring these unintended consequences along with it.
It says here, I'm going to read just a couple of country statistics. In Africa, the number of overweight or obese children under the age of 5 has doubled from 1990 to 2014. There was 5.4 million. Now there's 10.3 million. And then the rate of increase in Asia is difficult to quantify, they say. Asia is currently accounting for 48% of young children who are categorized as overweight or obese. Why Asia? What's going on there?
Well, it's interesting in Asia because we have now I'm speaking sort of generally here, but we really have countries with frankly unregulated market in terms of the sorts of foods that are being produced or being produced elsewhere and being imported into those countries, being very heavily advertised to parents, particularly to mothers, of course. We have an issue, particularly in Asia, where the infant formulas still contain considerable amounts of sugar, for example, and these are very heavily promoted to Asian mothers, and there is a lack of health literacy and a lack of nutritional literacy often amongst these people, so that they're seeing a product that they think is good for the child. There is some cultures that breastfeeding, which WHO recommends for 6 months minimum and up to 2 years, is not necessarily in all those cultures an acceptable practice. So there's many factors which come together to create a perfect storm, if you like, in many different countries and areas of the world for this this issue of increasing kids' obesity.
I'm talking to Dr. Timothy Armstrong, Program Manager for the World Health Organization's Commission on Ending Childhood Obesity. I remember a report, Dr. Armstrong, about a year and a half ago, roughly, where they said that this generation is the first one in a long, long time where the life expectancy is less than the one before it. That, just knowing that, is alarming, but this ties into this report, doesn't it?
Oh, very much so, yes. I mean, the report you're referring to was actually some work done by the sporting goods industries and primarily looking at the role of physical activity and the way that physical activity can impact on obesity and other non-communicable diseases. And yes, certainly, whilst overall health is improving on many fronts, and our fronts, and our life expectancy is increasing in general, we now have a problem globally where, and this is a global issue, and when I say global, the primary problems are in lower middle income countries where it's non-communicable disease, and that is cardiovascular disease, i.e. heart attacks and stroke, cancer, lung disease, and diabetes. These four conditions are the major killers globally, and many people still think that these are conditions of the rich countries. You know, again, it's the same as the obesity discussion we were just having. That in fact, 80% of the global deaths, which is over 60% due to NCDs, 80% of those deaths are occurring in low and middle income countries, and this is the main problem that WHO is now facing. There's been a real shift from what we sort of class as the traditional diseases, HIV, AIDS, TB, malaria, et cetera. We are globally getting control over those conditions and those diseases, but the non-communicable disease, the more lifestyle-relevant diseases that are running rampant.
Dr. Armstrong, there are callers that want to chime in, ask some questions of you. Demetria wants to ask you a question. It's something we touched on just a little bit, but she has a more in-depth question or comment. Go ahead, Demetria. You're on with Dr. Timothy Armstrong from the World Health Organization.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I noted with the call screener that a lot of baby formula is given away all over the world. But these formulas are full of sugars that do not occur in human breast milk. It predisposes the child to have a sweet tooth. And, I mean, there are other nutritional differences in the formula that are not great for babies, but this formula is given away around the world, even in this country. If you're in a hospital and have a baby, they give you a case of formula to take home. I'm interested in the doctor's take on that. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. What do you think, Dr. Armstrong?
Well, thank you. I mean, WHO's position on breastfeeding and infant formula is quite clear. We recommend breastfeeding is where possible exclusively breastfeeding for 6 months and up to 2 years where that's possible. Certainly, we are not in the habit of promoting breast milk substitutes, and we certainly don't agree with breast milk substitutes that contain sugars. I agree with your caller's comment that it's not simply just the sugars, et cetera, that are in the breast milks. The more research we do and find out about the qualities that breast milk has, the impact on the immune function of the child, the impact on that we're now seeing some relationship to their mental development, their brain development, et cetera, things that we've not yet been able to identify and can't synthesize and put in formulas. We don't. There is something called the Code of Breast Milk Substitutes, which is a WHO code that the member states agreed to many years ago, which has a strict criteria on the advertising and marketing of breast milk substitutes. And in fact, we don't agree with, as WHO, don't agree with this handing out of breast milk substitutes. And we do know that often this is facilitated by the companies producing the product itself.
Demetria, thank you for the call. Really appreciate it. So Dr. Armstrong, if that's the case and there's so much evidence that this is a bad thing, somebody must be gaining from this. Who's gaining by boosting the substitute breast milk with sugar? Who's getting something out of it?
Well, I mean, obviously, the companies that are producing the formulas are making a profit. That's their job to make profit. I do think that it's not all bad news, though. We have been able to work, we as WHO, through our influence and our power, and also work with the governments of our member states to change some of the practices in terms of what is being developed by companies and what is being promoted and how it's being promoted. So the tide, I think, is turning slowly there. Certainly there's been a change of behavior of the major multinational food companies that produce breast milks. Where we often see a problem, and this is not just in relationship to breast milk substitutes, but also in other foods that and beverages that are being developed and marketed to kids, is that in markets that are there is less regulation and markets where it's the local companies perhaps or the national level companies that don't necessarily have feel the same weight or concerns of an international agency such as WHO or have a government that necessarily has the capacity or the wish to act. So in many developing countries we have this problem, and countries like India, for example, we need to work harder to ensure that there are standards that companies will adhere to in terms of the manufacture of their food products.
Dr. Armstrong, do you have just a minute or two? We have to take a quick break for commercials, but I have a couple more questions on it. Are you okay on time?
Yeah, sure. With pleasure. Not
All
a
right.
Problem.
Stay where you are. That's Dr. Timothy Armstrong from the World Health Organization talking about child obesity, which they say is an exploding nightmare in a report that just came out. We'll continue this. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff on WGN. It's Bill Leff. Very disturbing report put out by the World Health Organization, the Commission on Ending Childhood Obesity. Dr. Timothy Armstrong is with us. He's the program manager over at the World Health Organization. It says there in the report that the important message is it's not the kid's fault, Dr. Armstrong, and that's true, isn't it?
Yes, clearly. I mean, it's it seems obvious to many, but we've, through our consultations around the globe on the issue, there is still a view held by many that these issues around what you eat and how much exercise or physical activity you do is a personal choice issue. There's an argument that could be made that holds true for adults, although there is some debate whether that's really true in the environment we live in today. But certainly for children, certainly for babies, you know, infants and young children, and we argue even adolescents, it's not their fault. It's not the fault of of the baby if it's being fed a sugary breast milk substitute, for example. It's not the fault of the young child if he or she is being exposed to rampant advertising for sugar sweetened carbonated beverages. It's not the fault of a child if they live in an environment where it's not possible to do sport and physical activity, or the school curriculum has taken that out of their life. So really removing the blame or the guilt from the individual, particularly the child, was one of the key messages that the commission wanted to get across.
Can I ask you quickly, because I don't get to talk to too many people from the World Health Organization, and you're involved. What about growth hormones? You know, not just my wife and I, but friends of ours have noticed, and we're not the only ones who notice this, that girls are developing a lot faster, and all the indicators point at growth hormones. Why are they still allowed to be used in foods?
Yes. Look, I mean, I can't speak to that question, but I can give you my personal observation, and WHO doesn't have a position on that. But we are recognizing, and it's becoming an issue, particularly for other aspects of health, not necessarily around the non-communicable disease agenda or the obesity agenda, but around issues around sexual health, for example, that particularly young women, but also young men, are reaching puberty far, far earlier than they have many years ago. We do know just overall better nutrition is a contributor to that. But as you say, the evidence is increasingly now that hormones that are being used in for example, some of the meats and the chickens that we are eating now, some of the chemicals that are being used in some of our agricultural processes are now being linked to this. So it's not yet an issue on the WHO's agenda, but it's certainly something we are observing, and it's one we'll have to watch, that's for sure.
I want to ask you one more quick question about the childhood obesity. I've noticed this. I live in an area that there's young kids everywhere. There's 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kids everywhere. And on an average Saturday when I was a kid, those kids would all be out playing and exercising, but now they're all playing computer games inside. That's got to play into this a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, I don't think the evidence suggests that it's computer games or TV per se. A wise ex-professor of mine once said, today's age, kids are on computers. In the year of their parents, we watch TV. In their parents, we sat by the radio. In their parents, they read a book. And the parents before, they were doing something else. But certainly we know that there is less physical activity going on, and I think the data and our sense is that it's more around the environment in its entirety, that there is a perception, or in many cases a reality, that the outside world is more dangerous for children. Parents are less willing perhaps to let their kids being out. Like you, I grew up in the country I know best, Australia, in the 70s, and after school every day I was on my bike down at the local river hanging out with my kids until dinner time.
Sure.
With my mates, that doesn't happen anymore. So we do know that physical activity is or lack of physical activity is an issue. We worried as an organisation that much of sport and physical activity and physical education is being removed from the school system, and so we don't want to blame any one industry or any one screen, but it's overall part of the symptom and part of the problem that we are facing. Yeah.
That's Dr. Timothy Armstrong, Program Manager for the WHO's Commission on the Ending of Childhood Obesity, the World Health Organization. If they want to know more about this, Dr. Armstrong, the website to visit is who.int, correct?
That's correct.
Right.
And we'd be happy to help anyone who has an interest in this area.
Fantastic. I appreciate you spending time with us today, Dr. Armstrong. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. You have a good day.
All right. Take care of yourself. A quick break. Steve with the news and then more show ahead. It's Bill Left with you on WGN. Steve, can I tell you how fast things work here behind the scenes on the show?
Just how fast do things work there behind the scenes?
You gave us earlier in the show, you broke in with the very sad news that Abe Vigoda had died.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people thought that Abe Vigoda died many years ago, but he did not. He died earlier today. We just got news of it. And I said to Kevin, you know, on the show Fish, the woman who played his wife.
Bernice
was his wife. Florence Stanley is the actress's name. I said, you know, she's from Chicago, and I believe still lives here in Chicago. we should get his wife on and we should talk to Florence Stanley.
Wow.
So Kevin and I are working on it and working on it. And then I look her name up on the Internet Movie Database, and she died in 2003. So I don't see that happening
today.
Be
a good get.
We will not probably have her on. But we are working on somebody who knew and loved and worked with Abe Vigoda. We're trying our best to get that done by the end of the show today.
That would be nice.
All right. Ryan Burrow is here. Ryan, you, of course, never worked with Abe Vigoda, and that, you said, is your biggest regret so far in the world of radio.
You don't know that.
Oh, did you work with him at some point?
You may
have worked with him.
No, probably not.
You're here to talk about something. You know, we've mentioned this several times, and I guess everybody's aware of it now, what's going on in Flint, Michigan with their water. It's as tainted could be. They were getting their water source from Detroit, and then somebody figured out they could probably make a lot more money if they went a different route, and it really backfired on them. The water is just, it's contaminated and it's awful. Well, there have been a couple of revelations in the story, so take us through them.
Yeah, first of all, the campaign for getting bottled water to Flint has really ramped up. We've seen a lot of celebrities step up, so a lot of good is happening out of this. Eminem just donated a bunch of water.
I believe a Michigan native.
Exactly, Detroit guy. Yeah. The Detroit Lions, Jimmy Fallon has gotten involved. P. Diddy has kicked in a million bottles of water.
Wow.
Anheuser-Busch, also 51,000 cans of water, not beer, but they actually
come in
cans. And then we've got locally 49th Ward Alderman Joe Moore is holding his water drive today, so anyone who wants to donate water can bring it over to his office, 7356 North Greenview until 7 p.m. 7356 North Greenview.
Good.
So a lot of people are kicking in water, and they want to help. That's
right.
Good news.
That's
and
positive.
Another positive that we want to tell you about is the water quality is improving. Still not perfect yet. It sounds as though it's far from it. We don't know when people will be able to drink the water out of their tap.
Well, what are they doing
like
to improve it, though? Because it's still coming from the same source. It's still coming from that river. So
No.
It's not?
They have switched it back to the Detroit. In fact, they did it earlier. I want to say it was in December that they switched back to Detroit. But remember, you've got all those chemicals in there right now, and so they've got to get all that out. And they're using special chemicals to fight the chemicals that are causing all the problems. So still not 100% yet. We don't know when that's going to happen. It could take some time. But in the meanwhile, we've got a couple other things going on. First of all, yesterday, the Michigan Attorney General announced an independent investigation. He brought in an FBI chief, former FBI chief of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
He also brought in a prosecutor who it appears as though he's worked with in the past to see whether or not there were any criminal wrongdoings leading up to this, whether it be at the state level, at the county level, at the city level. Something went wrong. Who knew what and when? And they are going to pursue, any kind of criminal activities that may have taken place.
So this is above and beyond the fact that they figured out that they would be saving money by doing it this way, even though it didn't work out well. At some point, somebody discovered we've got some problems, and they didn't stop it.
Sure. Well, that's what these two gentlemen are going to do. They're going to go back. They're going to look at, city council meetings. They're going to look at emails. They're going to look at text messages to see, maybe this could have been averted. Maybe people knew before the switchover happened that this would be a problem. That's their job.
Right.
We don't know whether or not they're going to find anything. We don't know if that's going to lead as high up as the governor, as many people have suggested. So that is just getting underway. Do not expect any revelations from that in the immediate future. This is going to be a process that takes a long time. NAACP is holding a public mass meeting, so everyone's going to kind of get together today and talk about their problems and how they're going to move forward. This is residents, local leaders. This is outside of kind of that city hall forum that we've seen so many protests at. So there's going to be another event going on today. And then, of course, the big issue on everyone's mind, not just the water itself, but having to pay your water bills while this is going on. I mean, essentially, what people have said flat out is we can only use our water for toilet water, essentially, at this point.
They weren't getting any kind of a price discount during the worst of these times. They weren't giving them any kind of a move on their price. They had to pay full price for their water.
Exactly. And so many people have just opted not to. They've received water shutoff notices, which, at this point, what does that matter? Right?
I swear to you, when we talked about this about a week ago, that's exactly what I said, which was if I was getting this water, there's no way in the world I'd be paying my bills. And Wendy said, yeah, but there's water you use, you don't even think about it, just for the plumbing, for your toilets and things like that. So if you shut your water off, it's going to come back to hurt you.
Well, and it's interesting because they're hearing different things from different people. The city council yesterday and the city administrator said, hey, we've got a problem here because people aren't paying their bills, and this is going to be a major financial issue for us in the near immediate and probably further down the road as far as their finances coming in and being able to pay for these. Because remember, they're still pumping water. I mean, the water is still flowing, whether or not you can drink it. It's still up and functioning, and they've got to pay employees and things of that nature. But the Michigan Attorney General came out yesterday and said, I wouldn't pay for it.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't pay for that water at all. I can't drink it, can't bathe babies in it, can't do anything with it. So,
but can you write that on your bill when you send your bill in? Can you say, hey, I'm not the only one who feels this way? You can't.
Now, obviously, state legislators are working on some kind of package deal where they kick in some money. So, you know, that's part of this $28 million package deal that state legislators in Michigan are working on right now and it should have no problem passing. But, you know, it's kind of in flux right now. Are these bills going to be paid for? Are they not? Mm-hmm. Should I continue? Am I going to be reimbursed? Mm-hmm. So everything's kind of up in the air with that.
Is it realistic or unrealistic to think that at some point, any time in the future, the people of Flint, Michigan can turn on their taps and have crystal clear water again? Is that ever going to happen?
That's the hope. I mean, and that's the hope. You've got a lot of really smart people working on this problem right now, and hopefully it's just a matter of time. I couldn't tell you right now if it's going to be days, weeks, months.
Forever.
Yeah, exactly. And eventually this is going to slip away from us, from our, you know, something's going to happen and Flint, Michigan water is going to be, you know, far from our minds, and hopefully people continue to donate water.
Except now I've read a couple reports in the last week or 10 days where they say if this is going on in Flint, then it's obvious to look at Flint's water and know that there's contaminants. All you need to do is see it. But they're saying there's plenty of other cities that are having not as bad a problem, but there's got to be stuff in the water that we can't see. Is that going to create some sort of a domino effect? Are we going to be looking at this all over?
Interesting you bring that up, because there was a school system in Ohio that noticed high levels of lead in the school drinking water. So they actually canceled classes for a couple days. Essentially the same problem, but just on a smaller scale. I don't quite know the specifics of where that water was drawing from or how the lead got in there, but I think we're a lot more aware of situations like this now than maybe we have been in the past. More sensitive to it.
I would think. Well, thank you, Ryan. Appreciate
it. No problem.
It's Ryan Burrow. We'll take a quick break and then give you more show. It's coming up next. It's Bill Leff on WGN. Steve, I have a question for you. Are you accepting questions? Steve Bertrand, are you accepting questions? Nope. Steve refuses to accept any questions. If you have a question for Steve, do not send it to him. He will not answer your question. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, there you
now.
Are.
I'm multitasking here.
You're doing more than one thing at once?
I am, believe it or not.
And you're good.
Thank you.
They asked older people, and they don't say exactly who these older people are. They don't say exactly what the age of the older people are, but let's assume that they are older.
Okay, but they did not ask me, just so you know.
They did not ask you, which is good, I guess. They said, what is the worst part of aging? You older people, come close. What is the worst part of aging, and what do you think they said?
I had an answer for that this morning.
But it has escaped you.
It's not forgetting?
No, it's not forgetting. They said the worst part of aging, this according to unnamed older people, is the stereotypes about older people. Mm. They say they have a very hard time fighting the stereotypes. What they did over at Huffington Post is they put together a list of things that they suggest you not say to older people because they will be offended. Can I share them with you?
I wish you would, yes.
All right. Again, if you have an older person near you or you've heard of one and you encounter them, do not say any of these things. These are bad things to say to older people. Number one, do not say this. Now, I would think this first one I would think would be a compliment, but it is not. You don't look your age.
Yeah.
Would that be hurtful? That sounds like a compliment.
Well, it just
to
says
me.
They expect you to look old for
oh,
your age.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what they say. That in the explanation, they say, what did you expect a 50 or 60 or 7-year-old to look like? The crypt keeper.
A 50?
Yeah, you know what I'm going to do? Hold on a second. I'm going to cross that one out.
Do you have a cross out machine there?
That one's crossed out. I'm actually going to raise that one. What did you expect a 90 or 100 or 100-year-old, 10-year-old to look like? A crypt keeper? We know that the intention behind this comment is harmless, but it's actually not a compliment. It's reinforcing the belief that old is automatically unattractive or decrepit or not sexy. So just say you look good. Don't say you look good for your age.
It's like saying you can't even see the scar.
All right. Now this one.
I have one.
You do? Do you have one? What
I
is
wasn't
this?
Even alive then.
Yeah, don't say that.
You don't want to hear that.
I never, never say that.
Never, ever.
You
ever.
Say that every day.
Kevin says
ever.
That every day. Every day. This is a phrase I don't like. And I hear this almost every day. Somebody will say something is the new something. So they say, don't look at me and say 50 is the new 20. I don't want to hear that.
Right.
It says it's another attempt at a compliment, but it goes horribly wrong. Think about what you're saying. It is not fashionable enough to be over 50. Why do they keep using 50 in their examples? I'm not comfortable with that. As we have said before, most post 50s, which, by the way, is my favorite cereal. Have you tried the new post 50s?
I've not tried the new post 50s.
It's so good.
It's like the old post 20s, isn't it?
Yes. They're shaped like Nanette Fabre. They're delicious.
Kevin?
Kevin, if you can say who Nanette Fabre is, I'll hand you $20. Who's Nanette Fabre?
I don't want to say.
Post 50s no longer have to worry about things like fitting in or being saddled with college debt or struggling in a budding career. We'll take our decades proudly. All right, this is a bad thing if you want. If you're near an old person, don't say this to them. Nobody says that anymore. I think we just had an example of that with Nanette Fabre and Kevin, didn't we, Steve? I think we did.
I think that was an example of that, yes.
Yeah, nobody says that anymore.
Whether it's in your workplace, it is, or at home, this one always stings. No one wants to feel as though they are outdated as an old office printer. Now, this one I don't think comes up very often. I can't imagine a scenario where I would say this to somebody older than me. Oh, you stayed up way past midnight. Good for you.
I could say that to me. Wait, maybe
you could
the
definitely
50s
say
do
that
apply.
To me.
Yeah.
It says just because a person isn't pulling all-nighters anymore doesn't mean that they can't stay up late or have a good time.
I cannot.
Do you go to bed a lot earlier now?
Well, I've always gone to bed early, but yeah.
But has it changed dramatically in the last few years?
By age, no.
No.
No, I've always been a killjoy.
No, here's what friends of mine who are older than me have told me, but I've not experienced this. Evidently, there is some sort of a phenomenon where as you get older, you tend to wake up a lot during the night and need to use the restroom. Has that happened to you? That has not happened to me at all.
That's great. That's like saying I don't look as old as I am. Thank you for questioning
that. That's my way of sugarcoating that same comment.
I appreciate the question. Well, this doesn't happen to me, but maybe
But
you.
Somebody your age right. must have experienced this. Yes. But you don't go through... Do you go through that? You don't go through that, do you?
Sometimes I like to make sure the kids are in bed, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Just check around the house, make sure everything's where it needs to be.
Do whatever I need to as long as I'm up.
Here's something else you should, again, just as a reminder, do not say this to older people that will hurt their feelings.
Can't believe you just violated a rule while talking to me.
Wow, you still do that? It says it's okay to use this if you're saying it in an impressed tone, like when you find out that someone still handwrites thank you notes or welcomes a new neighbor with some baked goods or any other polite thing that people don't seem to do anymore. It's definitely not okay if you're using it in a context to make people feel as though they are outdated, out of touch, or technologically challenged.
So, wow, you still do that?
Yes. Yes. I don't think I've ever said that to anybody in any context. Wow, you still do that? Here's one more. Don't say this to an old person or a person perceived to be older. Isn't that funny? You can say somebody's older. That's perfectly acceptable.
But
that
not old.
Old is bad, but right. older
well,
is fine.
You guys are both older.
That's hurtful, Kevin. That's,
older?
That's very hurtful.
You know, it's not even, it's hurtful, yes, but worse than that, it's mean.
It's mean.
I mean, treat your elders with more respect, Kevin.
So you're an elder now?
I need to be.
Steve and I will not invite you to our whittle parties right. where we sit on a porch and just whittle.
Your loss.
And talk about Grover Cleveland. What
and
a
then,
great man he
and
was.
And then we burn the shavings. We burn the shavings.
Yes, we always burn the shavings.
Oof.
Do not say this to an older person. Again, it's weird that you can say older and people just nod and go, yeah, it's an older guy. Right. That's an old guy. That's bad. That's
Who, the
bad.
Old lady? No, the no, older the lady
older woman.
Across the street.
When would you say this? Slow down, Grandpa. It says this one needs to go. It doesn't matter if you're directing it at an older person or just being sarcastic to a younger person. It is belittling. It is pure and it is belittling, pure and simple. Slow down, Grandpa.
It doesn't say anything about actually saying that to your grandpa, though.
You can say it to your grandpa.
Okay. Just
if your grandpa's going too fast, by all means, please remind him to slow down. You don't want to hurt him. All right. We will take a quick break, and then old Steve Bertrand will deliver the news, tell you what's going on in the news.
Say older.
older Steve Bertrand. I'll tell you what's going on in the news. It's Phil Leff on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Phil Leff on WGN. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, you could do that by phone. You can do that by text. Prison overcrowding is a big issue and getting worse all the time. The Charles Colson Task Force on Federal Corrections put out a report today where they say they want to drop the U.S. population, inmate population, by as many as 60,000. It's not going to happen right away. Megan Hughes joins us right now, ABC News correspondent, to talk about these findings. Hi, Megan. How are you? Uh-oh. Do we not have you? Megan, are you there?
I am here.
There
you
are. Hi. Yeah, I can hear you now. Hi. All right. These changes, now they say 60,000 inmates across the country, but not right away. Is this a plan that will take 5-10 years?
2024 is what they're saying. They also say it's going to save $5 billion. And a lot of this has to do with Bill revising mandatory minimum sentencing, which, you know, they're not the first to point to this as part of the cause of our exploding prison population. The federal prison system has seen a sevenfold increase in its population since 1980. That's when, you know, a lot of this mandatory minimum sentencing for drugs and for weapons went into place. The argument that this report makes is that a lot of these people are not violent criminals, that it isn't doing anything for public safety, and it is costing the federal government a lot of money to have those prison beds reserved for these nonviolent criminals for extended periods of time.
All right, walk me through this. Let's say there's a criminal who's incarcerated for a nonviolent crime. The way it goes today is the obvious, they serve time in a federal prison. But according to these new regulations, what would happen to that person?
Well, a lot of it would be, it would give judges more leeway to individualize plans. So it's not necessarily that they wouldn't serve any time in jail, but perhaps, and then the other case and some of the other recommendations, there needs to be more of a focus on rehabilitation and what happens to these people, these prisoners, when they are released, and how do we prevent some of the recidivism, because people are coming back and taking up those beds again when they get out of prison, and then they're committing another crime. The statistic, 40% of people leaving federal prison are then rearrested or have their supervision revoked within 3 years of leaving prison. So a lot of it is take some of that money from these prison beds that you're going to be saving. So take down some of the headcount, save money that way, and then reinvest that money in some of these rehabilitation programs.
So a program would be designed primarily, I mean, to help the person, obviously, but again, to keep them out of being a repeat prison visitor, huh?
Yeah, and you know, a lot of this, we've seen a lot of these reforms on state levels in Texas and Utah, Georgia, South Carolina. A lot of states have looked at the cost of mandatory minimums and have done things to sort of shake up their systems, but it has not happened on a federal level. And this is something President Obama, he has not endorsed this particular plan. This report was released by a bipartisan group. It was actually commissioned. A big push was from a former Republican congressman. But criminal justice reform has been a key push from President Obama in his final year.
All right. In this report that just came out, again, this is the Charles Colson Task Force on Federal Corrections providing this. You mentioned nonviolent crimes, but I have to think that drug crimes played into this a little bit, too, didn't they?
That drug crimes is one of the biggest things that they point to as far as the mandatory minimum sentences. They say mandatory minimum sentences for drug crimes need to be reserved only for the most serious offenses. So if you catch a drug kingpin, perhaps the mandatory minimum would still apply, but giving judges some leeway on those issues.
All right. So now that we know this, now that this report has come out, what is the next step? I mean, what you mentioned was that they were hoping to drop as many as 60,000 prisoners by 2024, but let's go closer in the timeline. What happens in the next year or two?
Well, keep in mind, these are just recommendations. So with Congress, if Congress acts, Congress needs to do something if there's going to be any dramatic revamp of how we enforce mandatory minimum sentences on a federal level. President Obama just today announced some executive actions, and he's taken some executive actions when it comes to criminal justice reform. Today he announced that he's banning solitary confinement for juveniles in federal prisons. But really, all the administration can do at some level, is tinker around the edges. It would really take congressional action to enforce all of these recommendations that the task force is presenting today.
Is any of this a campaign issue in the upcoming presidential election? Is this a hot topic for anybody? Is any one of the candidates really jumping on this, or is everybody just kind of neutral?
You would definitely hear Democrats talk about it. Both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders have talked about this. Bernie Sanders, I recall, just a speech in Iowa maybe yesterday or the day before, really focused on criminal justice reform. So I think Democrats are very much ready to pick up the mantle and pick up some of what President Obama, you know, he mentioned it in his State of the Union. He had a big speech in the fall. This has been a big push for him. I think the Democratic candidates would pick that up. Republicans, not as much. And I will say there has been a lot of Republican support for criminal justice reform and amongst conservative groups as well as Republicans in Congress. There are some in the Republican Party, though, who question whether the Republican Party should continue to be the party of law and order, particularly with a lot of the protests that we've seen and some of the violence against police officers. Is this the time to really dial back mandatory minimum sentences? And maybe, you know, there may be some fear there of appearing soft on crime.
We take our prison overcrowding very seriously here in Illinois, Megan, because most of our governors end up there. So this is a very, very big issue for us here in Illinois. I always hear about prisons, you know, even though the numbers keep going up of inmates, I hear about prison closings. We've had several here in Illinois, well, not several, but a couple of them. But are there new prisons opening around the country, or is that just not a thing anymore?
You know, that's a good question, and the report really didn't address how to deal with the overcrowding as it stands. It more looked at how to tackle and bring down that overcrowding.
Yeah, yeah. Great stuff. Thanks, Megan. It's Megan Hughes, ABC News correspondent, telling us about the findings of the Charles Colson Task Force on Federal Corrections and the overcrowding situation. We appreciate your time, Megan. Have a great day.
Thank you, Bill.
Take care. All right, a quick break and then a little bit more show for you. It's Bill Leff on WGN. It's Bill Leff with you on WGN. Wendy Snyder isn't just being quiet today. She's off today. If you've been listening to the show and you think, boy, Wendy just hasn't chimed in very much today, don't worry. She's not here. She'll be back tomorrow. No need to panic. Just a couple of loose odds and ends, some things that we had either wanted to discuss during the show but didn't for whatever reason. We'll do them now. Thing number one is this. Today, as it turns out, is the 30th anniversary of a huge, huge monumental event here in the city of Chicago, and that's the Chicago Bears, the Monsters of the Midway, as they've been called. They played the New England Patriots in a Super Bowl game 30 years ago today, and they crushed them. They creamed them. Destroyed them. That was 30 years ago. I know what you're thinking. Boy, that's a long time. That can't be right. That was like 10 years ago. 30 years ago today that the Bears won that Super Bowl. Now, as we were talking about it earlier in the show, it was myself and Dave Ennett, my friend Dave Ennett. We were reminiscing about the magic that that day brought to us and to the city and to the country because they became America's team. Sorry, Dallas Cowboys, but they did. And Kevin, I looked in at the booth at you and you just didn't seem to thrill you much. And it just kind of occurred to me now why it didn't really occur to you, why it didn't thrill you the way it thrilled the rest of us. And that's because you were busy not being born yet.
I was not born. That is correct. However, I have seen the game a good handful of times.
You know what? That's the best part of being a guy now is that there's videotape of everything that's ever happened from different angles. Like when I was a kid, when people would talk about some big event that I missed, like the Civil War, I'd go, well, let me put it on a computer and I'll watch it. I'll watch a videotape of it. They didn't have a videotape of it, but you can see footage of almost any event that's happened in the last 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, it exists on DVD at this point, I'm sure.
Is it as exciting watching it all these years later, knowing the outcome? Does that still get you excited or not?
Yeah, you know, it's just because we don't have that success right now and haven't really. I mean, the closest we had was 2006, and
yeah.
Since then, you know, it's not been...
It's not been pretty.
It's not been pretty.
They should show that video that you're talking about of that game to current Bears players and say, do what those guys are doing. When the other team has the ball, knock them down very quickly.
Quick, Jim McMahon or Jay Cutler?
Jim McMahon.
Really?
Jim McMahon.
All right. He's got a ring, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jim McMahon... Now, I'm not a sports expert. I'm just a guy that's watched a whole lot of sporting events over the years. was not the most talented quarterback in the NFL, not even close, but somehow, and this is the key to be, I'm getting all choked up. I promised myself I wouldn't cry. The key to winning is knowing how to win. And that guy, despite the fact that he was by far not the best quarterback in the NFL, figured out a way to win. Jay Cutler has incredible skills, incredible quarterback skills, has no idea how to win. That's the difference between those two guys, between a Jim McMahon and a Jay Cutler. Somehow Jim McMahon knew, throw to the guy and make him catch it and then score a touchdown and we will eventually win. And they did. They won a whole lot of games. Lost one game that season to the Miami Dolphins. That's it. So as hard as it is to believe, 30 years ago today, your Chicago Bears beat their New England Patriots and became the champions. We say world champions, but it's one of those things we do here in America. We don't invite teams from other countries to play in our world championships, like the World Series. Sometimes we let the Toronto Blue Jays in. Sometimes. Not very often. Every once in a while. But we still say we're the world champions, even though we don't invite teams from any other country. We're good at that. We're very, very good at that. All right, and the other story I wanted to bring up, and Kevin, I'll need your help on this too, because I'll be honest with you, I've heard of this guy, but I don't know exactly who this guy is. There's a rapper named, we say B.O.B., right? We don't say Bob.
Yeah, I think it's B.O.B.
B.O.B., bring your own beer.
Bobby Ray.
Is he Bobby Ray?
Yeah.
Is that, all right, he's a rapper, and his name is Bob. Now, does he hang out with Will.i.am? Because that would make sense. Do they pal around together?
They might. I'm not positive.
These are just two guys with normal names, William and Bob, but they went, now we're rappers.
You just add little dots in there and it
right.
works out.
We got to throw a dot or two in our name to sound more legit. So it's B.O.B. B.O.B. says, the rapper B.O.B., and where would we know him from? Is he famous for anything in particular?
That one song, Airplanes, was out not that long ago. I'll pull it up here in a second.
All right. Kevin will play you a little selection from the B.O.B., is this possible? He says that the earth is flat, according to him. I'm looking at the story, but it doesn't seem, I don't see why he would say something like that. Oh, he's got a bunch of tweets. He's on the Twitter, Kevin. Here's what he says on the Twitter. He's one of these people, and I've heard this theory before when it comes to people who maintain that the earth is not round, but it's flat. Although I would use as evidence, again, I'm not an attorney, but if this ever went to court, I would use as evidence satellite photos of the planet that show that it's round.
Yeah, but what are satellites really?
But a bunch of in-space liars. That's all right. You just discredited the satellite community.
Okay.
No, you're right. No, you're right. But people have said this, and Bob, the rapper.
It's B.O.B., I believe.
It is Bob, B.O.B., Bob.
B.O.B.
What's a B.N.B. then? Is that a bed and breakfast? Do rappers have a bed and breakfast that I'm not aware of? B.O.B., the rapper Bob, says he's one of these guys that says if the earth was curved, you could look at things and they would fall off the horizon. Not literally fall off because it's a flat world, according to them. But when you looked at things far away, you would see some sort of an arc. Is that correct? Is that his?
According to him, yeah.
Here's what he says, B.O.B. on the Twitter. No matter how high in elevation you are, the horizon is always eye level. Sorry, cadets, I don't want to believe it either. That's not good evidence. That is not solid evidence. Do you have a little bit of him you can play, B.O.B.? All right. He's quiet. This B.O.B. is a quiet rapper. He raps in libraries. Here it is.
You'll recognize it, I'm sure.
Can we pretend that he's got a beautiful voice.
That's Haley Williams, I believe.
Oh. You mean H dot A dot L dot E dot Y dot? I know this song. Why do I know this song?
It was around a few years ago.
Popular song?
Yeah. Here he comes, I think.
He just jumps in and starts rapping over Haley Williams. Oh, this is pretty. I like this. Would you like to dance with me?
Sure. Don't fall off the edge of the earth. Careful.
Careful. This is great. I like this. I haven't heard this in a while. Yeah. Let's pretend like it's 98. Like I'm eating lunch off a styrofoam tray. Now, he seems to be a fairly knowledgeable individual about eating lunch on styrofoam plates. He's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing. Why would he say that the earth is flat? That doesn't make any kind of sense. Here's another tweet from B.O.B. Again, his theory is if you'd look at things that are off in the distance, and you've been someplace where you can see stuff that's miles away. You'll be driving your car and you can see stuff that's like 3 miles away, and you go, oh, yeah, that's that over there. He says with stuff that's far away, you would see an arc, like it would curve. But the Earth is too big for that, Kevin.
Yeah,
he's
I think
wrong.
He's failing to realize that the Earth is really, really, really huge.
Gigantic.
Yeah.
It's like the size of the Earth.
Right.
Roughly. Not exactly, but roughly the size of the planet Earth. The city's in the background. All right, he's showing a picture. He took a picture, B.O.B. the rapper. He took a picture and he says, the cities in the background are approximately 16 miles apart. Where is the curve? Please explain this. But you wouldn't see that with something. You know how, like, when you're... Okay, I'll give you a great example of this. I grew up in Oak Forest, and there was a part of Oak Forest where we could see the Sears Tower, even though that was, like, 25 miles away, 30 miles away. And we saw it flat, like we saw it from where we were standing. We saw the Sears Tower flat, right? We didn't see any kind of an arch. But he, the rapper B.O.B., maintains that if the Earth was round, it would be below us because it would be down planet ways from us.
I think he needs to add a scientist into his title
yes.
as well. Rapper and scientist.
Yes. All right. Well, I'm sorry if you're a big B.O.B. fan, and I know a lot of you are. I apologize, but his theories on the planet being flat as opposed to round are incorrect.
You know who else? I forgot to bring this up earlier to you, but do you remember Tila Tequila?
Tila Tequila.
She
yes.
was relevant a few years ago.
She's on MTV.
She's about equally as crazy on Twitter.
What is she saying?
A lot of stuff about government experiments and things like that, and she also talks about the world being flat. If I'm not mistaken,
no, she's wrong too. Tila Tequila is wrong. For the first time, in my opinion, everything else she's said has been right. All right, we will take a quick break. We'll talk to Ro and Anna and find out what they've got coming up on their show. Stay where you are. It's WGN.